at London Weekend Television, alongside such luminaries as Trevor Phillips, who was best man. I think Mandelson was best man at Trevor Phillips' first wedding. And my favourite columnist, David Aronovich, How the Media Works, Chapter 101. But what's wrong with the man? How can he now be looking back upon a career that could have gone down in history as magnificent and will instead be remembered as hideous? Not just failure or shame, but actually hideous conduct.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Prime Minister is chairing a meeting of his cabinet as police review new allegations against Lord Mandelson. Documents appear to show the former minister leaked government data to Jeffrey Epstein back in 2009. Sir Keir Starmer is now facing accusations of poor judgment in appointing Peter Mandelson as US ambassador in 2024. Plaid Cymru MP Liz Saville-Roberts has told LBC Sir Keir has questions to answer.
Regardless of the fact that, of course, the Prime Minister would have been advised, somebody else would have done due diligence, I guess, in appointing Peter Mandelson as the ambassador to the USA, and also in appointing him to the House of Lords. But where was the Prime Minister's judgment in this, and those who were advising him as well?
Peter Mandelson hasn't responded to the latest revelation, but has previously denied wrongdoing. Separately, Sarah Ferguson's charity will close after the latest revelations about her friendship with Epstein, and Bill and Hillary Clinton have agreed to testify in a US House investigation into the late sex offender. In other news this morning, Ukraine says Russia fired more than 70 missiles at the country overnight. The strikes again targeted energy infrastructure during freezing conditions. At least 9 people have been injured. The government is to cover the travel costs of children and young people in England who have cancer. Families often have to spend large amounts of money travelling to and from appointments and treatment. The plans will be rolled out next year. The Care Minister Karen Smith told LBC it aims to remove barriers to treatment.
It's not means tested, and that's a really important point because it means that we can get to everybody more rapidly and take out that extra step of filling out more forms and means tested. We estimate it will, the £10 million will cover that. It's about 1,900 families.
And Elon Musk is merging his space and AI businesses into a single company. The billionaire has repeatedly said he wants to develop technology to allow data centres to operate in space. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 7 at 10,335. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Some hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank that gives you 1% cash back on groceries.
So can I get cash back on cake mix?
Indeed.
And icing?
Yep.
And sprinkles?
Sure.
And candles?
Yeah, and you can turn all that cash back into a nice birthday treat.
How do you know it's my birthday?
Just a hunch. Get 1% cash back on groceries, fuel and everyday transport when you spend with Chase. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. 1% cash back on this debit card spending for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Eligibility and exceptions apply. May be changed or withdrawn.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. We return inevitably to the Epstein story, the Epstein files, but specifically, I think, to start with, to Peter Mandelson. Although, if I can be completely honest with you for a moment, I'm still really wrestling with the topics that we tackled yesterday. I'm really struggling to understand why more people don't seem to be focusing and zoning in on the maintenance of contact, the resumption of warm relations after Epstein was jailed for soliciting a child for prostitution. I know how a PR rehab. We had a brilliant call yesterday, didn't we? From the lady with experience in sort of international crisis management and the tactics that you deploy to make sure that the world moves on. These are dark arts, the likes of which normal folk like you and me will never really have need to call upon. I don't know why, but I have to be careful what I say because I don't want to get sued, before lunch. There was a case some years ago where the guilty got off, or one of them sort of got his punishment massively reduced because he claimed he had dementia. And then some years later, he sort of had miraculously recovered, and he was very, very rich. And there is a sort of language, isn't there? There's a vocabulary of great wealth. I think Epstein was worth in excess of $500 million when he died. There's a vocabulary of great wealth that the rest of us simply can't grasp, I think. We can't really get our head around. Yeah, here it is. He was called Ernest Saunders, and he was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment, but was released after 10 months as he was believed to be suffering from Alzheimer's disease. He subsequently recovered. I've got no more to say about the subject, but I'm not going mad. That was in my mind. It was a big fraudulent attempt to manipulate the share price of the Guinness company. And you kind of find yourself wondering whether... What would you be like? Would you be like this? So, look, Mandelson, I have to, again, be slightly careful what I say, because I don't want to be sued before lunch. I don't particularly want to be sued after lunch, either. Can I be absolutely clear about that? But I'm not on the radio after lunch, so the likelihood would be much, much slimmer. The allegations that Mandelson is facing now are not like the other ones. Me, with my peculiar obsession with the fact that they all stayed friends with him, whether you're talking about Andrew or his wife, Sarah Ferguson, or whether you're talking about Elon Musk wanting to go to his parties after he was convicted of procuring a child for prostitution. I don't know whether or not Elon Musk was sending him emails asking if he could go to his parties for a big rave up before he was convicted of procuring a child for prostitution. But you see, I know that he was doing it after. On what possible planet do you find yourself keener to party with someone after they've been done for procuring a child for procuring a minor, if you prefer, for prostitution? You don't want to party with him before that, but you want to party with him after that. What on earth? You see what I mean about being obsessed with this element of the story? I can't get past it. And I'm not alone, obviously. A large part of the scandal involves people maintaining contact with him after this particular conviction was secured, when he was already essentially established as a paedophile. But that's not a big enough offence to cut off contact. Ah, man, here's a game you probably don't want to play. How much would you have to love somebody to maintain contact? I mean, a family member, your closest friend ever gets done for procuring a child for prostitution. Do you stay? Do you have to stay? I mean, I have some borderline insight into this, because a lot of teachers at both of my schools, as you know, ended up being jailed for paedophilia, for child sex abuse against some of my peers. And you don't change your view immediately. It's weird. If you've got fond memories of somebody, I really hate this about them, actually. I hate the fact that you don't have many fond memories if you go to schools like mine. Maybe that's not true or fair, but they can be very bleak and brutal places. Don't get your violins out. They're the most expensive schools in the world, but they turn out emotionally crippled weirdos who find it very easy to become prime minister, but not to admit vulnerability, talk about their feelings, or be present in emotional relationships. And you have fond memories of a monk who was nice to you, or the teacher that ran the rugby team. And then, you know, there are rumours. There's possibly more than rumours. But when it all becomes clear, I told you about getting a phone call, didn't I, when I was walking over Waterloo Bridge, and my phone rang, and it was West Midlands Police. I haven't thought about this. Well, isn't it strange, the things that pop into your head once you start looking under rocks? It West Midlands Police, and I remember she said to me, "You've probably been expecting this call." And my first thought was, because my dad had died about 3 months previously, and my first thought was that my dad had done something daft in terms of leaving a car in a car park or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd never had a grievance. I'd never had a bereavement in my life before. And I thought, like, Dad had done something, forgotten to do something, and then died. And then it was, I don't know why my brain was doing that, because you just got the mental Rolodex. Why on earth would the police be contacting me about something? How nice it is not to have anything in my glove compartment, but my mental glove compartment that would have involved culpability. I was thinking, oh no, they've got me now. But it wasn't. It was one lad from that period of my life had found the courage to go into the local police station and tell them what had happened to him. And the rock that he, that brave, brave boy, the rock that he found the courage to lob into the pond started rippling everywhere to the point where many other boys came forward and phone numbers were swapped. I think my phone number was given to the police because somebody else thought that maybe I'd been on this guy's list. And I wasn't, but I certainly was able to provide a statement. I provided an account. They didn't need me in court. They didn't need any witness statements from me, but it was an extraordinary moment. And then it happened again at my next school at Ampleforth, when my favourite monk, probably, or at least a monk who showed me great kindness and about whom I had no suspicions really, ended up being jailed for abusing a boy some years later. And they steal what you have. This is, I mean, in the great scale of things, I'm not expecting my sadness or sorrow to matter. But they steal what you have. Well, they steal what little fond memories you have. And it's difficult immediately to process. That's why I'm talking about this. Immediately that conviction drops, or immediately that allegation is made. Do you cut the umbilical? Depends how close you are in the first place, right? That's why I began by asking you, who would you stay in touch with? Who would you stand by, even as you believed they were guilty, if they had been guilty of procuring a child for prostitution? I don't think I could do it. I mean, I don't have any brothers. And my dad's dead. I don't know if I could, a man, procuring a child for prostitution. Whoa. Actually, you know, it crossed my mind when I fell in love with my wife and I was trying to think who would marry me. I'd always had in the back of my mind that this monk would marry us. And it came to the top of my mind. I thought, oh, I can ask. Oh, no, I can't. He's a paedophile. But you never took that fond memory completely away. That initial impulse was still there. That so how can you maintain contact with these people? How can you desire to go to a party? Oh, that's a question Elon Musk would have to answer. I can't answer it. But we are talking today about Peter Mandelson. And look, the allegations that he faces about leaking sensitive government information to a paedophile are huge. In fact, they're so huge, it's a little bit difficult sometimes to pinpoint precisely how huge they are. And I don't really know. I remember who was it that got busted hobnobbing with the foreign government when they were in the cabinet? Was it Priti Patel? Again, I don't want to get sued for libel before lunch, but I remember thinking, how big is it? I don't have, it's, you know, those fairground games where you hit the thing with a hammer and it flies up the meter and rings a bell at the top. I don't have one of those really. I don't understand why the bells aren't ringing on the Epstein stuff, on that post-2008 business more. Why people like Musk, who had the audacity to turn up at the racist rally Robinson ran and start claiming that he's there to protect women and children, and he's posting messages to a paedophile, looking forward to going to his party and seeing all the girls there. So I don't get why that's not bigger, right? I don't get why that hammer has dropped and the weight is making its way up the meter or whatever you call it, and it's not going ding, 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 ding. I don't get it. I didn't get it when, I'm pretty sure it was Priti Patel, was having secret meetings with the Israeli government and not telling the Prime Minister, that I think it was Theresa May at the time. That looked to me, that really seemed to me to be disgusting. That would end a career, right? And Mandelson now, apparently, the documents released by the Department of Justice appear to show, choose my language carefully because I don't want to get sued before lunch, they appear to show that Mandelson provided Epstein with market-sensitive information when he was business secretary in 2009. And the conviction for procuring a minor for prostitution came in 2008. So, what is wrong with him? 03456060973. It's a weird one, this. Because Mandelson, perhaps uniquely for people who follow British politics, has been front and centre for the best part of four decades. I think the first time he got into trouble was greed. He bought a house he couldn't afford, borrowed money secretly from a Labour-supporting millionaire called, if memory serves, Geoffrey Robinson. I think he owned a New Statesman at one point, and he got into trouble for that. And then he got into trouble for cozying up to some super-rich people. I think they were called Hinduja, the Hinduja brothers, who enlisted his help in securing passports, or tried to enlist his help in perhaps securing passports and moving a little faster up the queue than the rest of us would have done in the same circumstances. So there's always a, can we call it a fetishization of wealth? It's not true that all very rich people are unhappy. But it is true that very rich people who don't think they're rich enough will always be unhappy. There is one of the great lessons of therapy is the hole that you have inside you where care should have been. The fact that you were not cared for enough. You could have been loved. The problem with schools like mine is you can be massively loved by your parents, but you're sent away to a place where you're not cared for. You want to understand Boris Johnson or David Cameron or any of these men. That's what's inside them. And you can see it with Trump and you can see it with Musk. They weren't cared for. No one looked after them when they were little. And that gaping hole inside them, men think they can fill it with drugs or alcohol or sex or money. They think they can fill it with money or they can fill it with this. You see, Andrew Tate is probably one of the finest examples of the damage that can be done to a little boy who will dedicate the rest of his life to pretending that he isn't hurt and crying. And of course, if it's that you need, then all the money in the world is never going to fill that hole. And you can't understand why, and you keep pursuing it. So I'm mentioning that because I can make sense of some mysteries, psychological mysteries, if you like. But I don't think that makes sense of Mandelson. And we have 40 years, depending on how committed to studying politics you are, we have 40 years of case study, of study. We've watched him for 40 years. David Aronovich has written a beautiful piece today on his Substack, which I really, really recommend, about watching the stages in this. Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail has written a very homophobic piece about how he always knew Peter Mandelson was a wrong one. But, you know, that's, I guess that's what you would expect in these sort of circumstances. You have a kind of ability to look through a lens of fault. I don't know anyone in this business who doesn't have a Peter Mandelson anecdote. I've got two. One is secondhand and one is firsthand. His tentacles, to use a word that was used a lot yesterday to describe Jeffrey Epstein, his tentacles reach into every single corner of the Labour Party. See, Starmer was a relatively clean skin on Mandelson. He wasn't part of that new Labour movement. He was too busy being a lawyer and the son of a toolmaker. But he brought him in. He brought him into the fold and sent him to Washington, D.C. as an ambassador. So even that ability to cauterize the potential scandal that always followed him around didn't work. I mean, that might perhaps be the other thing. Is why didn't people cut him loose? But the first question I'm going to ask you is what how do you explain it? Drawing on whatever you want. You'll notice in this introduction, I've drawn somewhat surprisingly, because I never know what I'm going to say until the light comes on. But sometimes I'm surprised myself with where my mind and memories take me. But that's not a coincidence, is it? Drawing upon my own experience of sex abusers and the difficulty of cutting ties entirely, emotionally or mentally, even if you're cutting them physically, drawing on the role of wealth, the pursuit, the fetishization, drawing on lots of things from my own life in trying to work out what is wrong with Peter Mandelson. So you can do the same. 03456060973 is the number that you need. Of course, you also have this underlying thought that that there's still as much in the Epstein files that we haven't seen as there is that we have seen, and it's Trump's Department of Justice that is deciding what does and doesn't get released. So, you know, hey, how likely is it that Trump would have pardoned Epstein if he had not died in his prison cell? He's pardoned equally awful people. There's so much here, but I'm just going to pick on one bit. We picked on a bit too much yesterday. The second hour was brilliant. First hour was great, really good. But it was my fault because I can't get past the gristle of an issue. And on this occasion, it's that 2008 conviction. And it's relevant to Mandelson as well, because if, as seems possible, he was sharing privileged information, market-sensitive information, so giving Epstein stuff that would enable him to make money off British government secrets almost, he was doing it. If he'd done it in 2007, that would be gross. If he did it in 2009, it's something else entirely, because it's happening after the conviction for procuring a minor for prostitution. So it's not something we do very often, because we don't usually know enough about people to say this. But he's been in the public eye for the best part of 40 years. What's wrong with him? How do you explain Peter Mandelson's behaviour? Bearing in mind that at the moment the leaking of information involves only allegations, the payment of money was enough for him to resign from the Labour Party, so $75,000 that appears to have made its way to Mandelson, who simultaneously claims that he has no recollection of the payment, but he did confirm that his husband had received $10,000 to cover the cost of an osteopathy course. I think I've died and gone... Oh, no, I haven't died. I just think I've gone mad. Pay for your own bloody osteopathy course. Or indeed, ask your rich husband to pay for it. I mean, what? What's wrong with these people? And what's wrong with Peter Mandelson? 0345 6060 973. It's 1021.
LBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. Craving an unforgettable destination where culture, history, architecture, romance, and the excellence of French gastronomy all meet? With Air France, Paris and all its delights have never been closer. Starting March the 29th, enjoy twice daily flights to Paris from £98 from London Gatwick, return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
It might be cold outside, but things are really warming up at the Wren Winter Sale. With red-hot prices on our high-quality, fully-built kitchens and fitted bedrooms. Right now, there's up to 60% off fully-built kitchens and all bedroom units. Plus up to 7 years interest-free credit. Made for making you feel warm inside, whatever the weather. Wren. Made for living.
Visit your nearest Wren showroom. Offers apply when you buy 5 or more kitchen units or 3 or more bedroom units. Finance subject to status and minimum spend.
With LV, I can get my home insurance from just £133. They've made it easy for me to get a great price. And their 24/7 emergency helpline lets me look after what matters to me. Because insurance is simple when it's me and LV.
No wonder we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. Get your quote today at lv.com. 10% of new customers paid £133 or less July to December 2025. LV General Insurance is part of Allianz.
Dreaming of a getaway? With P&O Cruises, you can wake up to a new paradise every day. And with new all-inclusive packages now making a splash, why not go all in and get even more out of your next holiday?
P&O Cruises. Holiday like never before.
Limited availability on all-inclusive packages.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
23 minutes after 10 is the time. I guess a few people actually, maybe do this as a separate conversation, contacting me to tell me tales of people who stayed in contact, stayed close to men who had been convicted of child sex abuse. And in Jeffrey Epstein's case, of course, the original conviction in 2008 was for procuring a minor for prostitution. The PR campaign he mounted to sanitize that, and indeed the plea deal that he struck in the court, in the moment, was visible from space. But you can only forgive it if you want to forgive it. We may, that may be a separate strand of conversation, or we may work it into this one, but I just want to know what it is. What's wrong with Peter Mandelson that his proximity to wealth boiled what is, by any account, an enormous brain so completely? Adam's in Manchester. Adam, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Big fan of yours.
I think first of all,
it's important to get this across, and because I often have this conversation with myself. You're never ever going to be able to get into the head of somebody that would do something like this, just as much as I can. So all you can try and do is try and make logic of the mess that you've got in front of you. So we're never gonna know the answer. But I just think that people in a position, or not all people, I want to make this clear, not all people, of course, and not all rich, but it ultimately boils down to a need of power and control, entitlement and narcissism. So they've already got. There's nothing else that they can, all the things that we're taught as, you know, when we're young to aspire to, sort of wealth, status, power, they've got all of those things. And I truly believe that it's just the next thing to make them feel that they're still achieving something that most normal people will never and wouldn't ever want to achieve.
I, what's really interesting, maybe my memory's been working overtime already this morning, and I can't remember where I saw this, but someone pointed out that very few people start off like this. It's why I'm sometimes a little bit wary of labels like narcissist. Some of these are diagnosable conditions, aren't they? Some pathologies are on the list. But it's sort of, you know, that line, absolute power corrupts, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I think that the closer you get to the sun sometimes, the more likely your wings are to melt.
I just think that if you're in these circles, the thing is, a lot of these, Pete Mandelson, you mentioned Andrew Tate, Donald Trump, love them or loathe them, they have different brains to a normal person before any scandal.
I disagree. I think they've been created by circumstance. This is the whole bedrock of therapy, which, you know, spoiler alert, which really works if you're lucky.
Yeah, but I understand that, but what I'm saying is they're wired in a certain way to get whatever they want at whatever cost, and I just think that this really does boil down to the dehumanization of people.
Yeah.
Power,
that's part of. I mean, we're going. You're taking us a little bit back to yesterday's territory, which is fine. There's still a lot to explore, but I'm more interested this morning in what this proximity to money does to people. It's like this, because this is where I think you can say, I would not be like that. Or at least I think you can. If someone was making you rich, if they were giving you, I don't know what works in my world or in your world, if they were giving you share tips, or they were literally telling you every day a horse that wins a race, and the first time you put a few quid on it, you did it more in hope than expectation, and it came in. So you put half of that money on it the next time they gave you a tip, and that came in. And then a year later, you're richer than your wildest dreams could ever have allowed. You've got a money machine. You're like Jack and the Beanstalk with a goose laying golden eggs. And the person that gave you the golden goose is a nonce.
Yeah.
What do you do?
This is the debate, isn't it? I don't think anybody is going to truly ever understand the mind of.
Do you not?
The mind of a, the
so
mind
basically,
of a
you're shooting
like
my
that.
Entire phone in stone dead at 28 minutes past 10 in the morning.
No, not intentional. But what I'm saying is, a normal person is never going to be able to understand why anybody would do that, other than with money comes. Money is the root of all evil.
Love of money is the root of all evil. If you're going to quote St. Paul at a Benedictine educated boy, then you better quote it correctly, Adam. It's the love of money that is the root of all evil. And that actually contradicts what you've just said, because that means you can understand it. You know, St. Paul provided a template by which we understand lots of people's behavior going back in this case millennia. So I think what you're saying is that you and I will never feel whatever it is that drove him. but we can perhaps use words to describe the thing we will never feel. And the closest we come at the moment is to this extraordinary reverence for wealth. That line he said, and I should dig it out to get it exactly right, about being supremely comfortable. When he was on a yacht, wasn't he, with George Osborne and a Russian oligarch. It was a Russian oligarch's yacht. Do you know anyone like that? It's that idea that you turn off your brain, you turn off your conscience, you turn off your moral compass, you turn off your instincts, you turn off everything when you are in the presence of enormous wealth. Why? I think we can get our heads around this. I think it's a lot easier to get our heads around this than it is to get our heads around all the other stuff in the Epstein files. But why? What is wrong with Mandelson? 0345 6060 973. Dominic Ellis is here with your headlines.
The Prime Minister is chairing a meeting of his cabinet as police review new allegations against Lord Mandelson. Documents appear to show the former minister leaked government data to Jeffrey Epstein back in 2009. A 13-year-old boy has been arrested in connection with a crash involving an e-scooter in Poole last week. Dorset police say a pregnant woman whose baby was born afterwards in hospital remains in a serious condition. And charities have welcomed a government move to cover travel costs for families with children who have cancer. It's part of the new National Cancer Plan being set out today. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Some hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Process check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
It's time to scale up that fishmonger business, Anne. With free day-to-day online banking from Virgin Money, you'll be a big fish in no time. Now that's a real catch of the day. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus fees apply for chaps and international payments. Terms and exclusions apply. Backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Mummy, please can you tell me a bedtime story?
Once upon a time, there was a very tired mummy who'd been busy all day. And basically, she was too knackered to cook, so she ordered herself sweet and sour chicken, special fried rice and some prawn crackers on Uber Eats instead.
That's not a very good story, mummy.
Great ending, though.
When you've done enough, Uber Eats and get your favourite restaurants delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £40 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody is watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
So, I mean, it's all very well me getting, you know, all teachery about it. There are two phone-ins here, aren't there? And I should have spotted that sooner. There is one about the relationship between money and morality. And then there is one about somehow not maintaining warm relations with somebody after they have done terrible things in the context of child sex abuse, which quite rightly, but somewhat belatedly in recent years has become something that, it is taken seriously. It's also, of course, very cynically exploited by racists when the abusers are brown to pretend that it is something that white men don't do. No coincidence, of course, that roughly half of the men arrested at the protests outside that refugee facility in Epping turned out to have come to the police's attention regarding domestic violence allegations themselves. It's a heck of a lot of projection going on at these events. And then you end up with a bloke turning up at Tommy Robinson's or Stephen Yaxley Lennon's racist jamboree, claiming that he cares deeply about women and children being abused while preparing to provide every pervert on the planet with the technology that they need to undress children, and sending emails to a pervert expressing a deep desire to go to his party because of all the girls. That's pretty clear. So there are two topics here, and we will no doubt have both of those conversations. But on the first subject, let's have a listen to this. You may have come across it before. No prizes for recognising it, because the first line, at least, is one of the most established in the canon of American literature. Let me tell you, I almost want to do an accent here, but you'd probably think I was Welsh. Let me tell you about the very rich. They are different from you and me. They possess and enjoy early, and it does something to them. Makes them soft where we are hard, and cynical where we are trustful, in a way that, unless you were born rich, it is very difficult to understand. They think, deep in their hearts, that they are better than we are because we had to discover the compensations and refuges of life for ourselves. Even when they enter deep into our world or sink below us, they still think that they are better than we are. They are different. It's a generalisation. It's also a beautiful piece of prose by F. Scott Fitzgerald in The Great Gatsby. But it speaks to something, doesn't it? And it this relationship between money, morality and Mandelson is something I want you to help unravel. What happened? What is happening here? Why would Mandelson, a man possessed of epic intelligence and acuity and political insight and PR genius, abandon all of those when in the presence of great wealth? So strange. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. Margaret in Catterick, I think, is taking us down the other path, because we've spoken before, Margaret, and the question of how people can maintain warm relations with men convicted of these kind of crimes is one a bit close to home for you.
Yes. Hello again.
Hello. You must ring me on a jolly topic one day, Margaret.
Yeah, I'm trying. Yeah. If you'd asked me who'd written that quote, I could have told you.
Oh, well, well done.
And I would have expected a gold star in return.
Well, you've got one.
Yeah, thank you. This is about, as we've discussed before, yes, my ex-husband, who was convicted of computer child pornography, but as part of the bundle, which wasn't presented because he pleaded guilty, were actual elements of child sex abuse.
Oh, God.
So, because he pleaded guilty, those things were never brought to light, but they are part of the public record if anybody wanted to look at them.
Right.
After his conviction, he moved back to the same area where we had lived before. And I found out that he was still meeting with friends that he'd known before. He was still taking part in social activities with those same people from beforehand. And then I found that he had become a trustee of a particular charity. Now, if you are on the sex offenders register, or if you have ever been on the sex offenders register, and you are still not completely out of it,
yes,
you know, it can last 10 years, 15 years, whatever, that's breaking the law. So I called his probation officer.
Right.
And I said, la 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 la, do you know that? And within a month, his name was no longer on.
But this is extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, it's exactly in the same sort of ballpark as what we're discussing, because the word that is appearing in my mind in 20-foot-high letters is plausibility.
Yes. And you have to remember that he's your lovely researcher, whose name I can't remember, and I do apologise.
Don't worry, nor can I. Right, that's a joke. It's Amelia. It's Amelia.
sorry, Amelia. Said, was he charismatic? Is he charismatic? And I said, no, but he is absolutely a pillar of the community.
Well, they often
he
are.
Well, yeah.
Mine was a monk. So, I mean, the guy at my school was a monk,
yeah, exactly,
and the other one was a teacher.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So it was very easy for him to wander around and wear the clothes, say the right things, do the right things. And even during the trial, of course, trial period, people believed him.
Of course, because the alternative is to recognise something about yourself that you don't want to recognise, which you... I remember when we spoke, for people who don't remember, I think you were putting together an invitation, were you, for a party? And you were on his computer...
Right.
You were on.
Goodness.
Well, it was a fairly memorable story that you told me, Margaret. and you were on his computer and stumbled across the images, and at that point your world fell to pieces. But you behaved in a way I've never forgotten, in that you immediately... and once you kind of got your breath back, you immediately went to the authorities. It never crossed your mind to let him explain himself.
No.
But a lot of people, a lot of women in exactly, and men perhaps,
yes,
in exactly the
that.
Same situation. Well,
yes.
There you go. So I always remember your story precisely because what you thought was obvious behaviour and absolutely unremarkable was both remarkable and not obvious, because people... Because of what you learned about yourself that day was that you had fallen for a paedophile, which is a terrible thing to learn about yourself, but you somehow, for some reason, you the path was clear to you of what you must do and what you should do. But for other people, even with much lower associations, perhaps they maintain contact and keep up warm relations because they'd rather believe the thing that casts them in a better light.
Mm-hmm.
Which
Absolutely.
Is that I didn't fall for the plausibility or the charisma or the authority, the social authority of a paedophile. I'm not that silly. So I'm going to pretend, or I'm going to convince myself he's innocent.
Yes. And it's so much easier to live life like that.
Yeah, I guess it is. What do you feel towards, I mean, let's imagine someone, and we probably don't have to, someone that you were quite close to, who maintained contact with. What do you feel towards them?
Oh, gosh. The immediate thing, gosh, you've really made me think now, James, because
Take your time. Or tell me to get lost if you want. There's no pressure.
I wouldn't dream. I couldn't dream. The immediate thing is that I feel sorry for them.
Right.
Because how can you... gosh, this sounds... I'm just going to splurge it. How can you live your life thinking... That is more important than anything else. The desire to be, in inverted commas, personally right, never make a mistake, that this can't possibly have happened to me because I am so-and-so, because I live my life in this kind of a way. And therefore all we're doing is looking at America. And seeing, God, am I allowed to say these things?
Yeah,
and saying,
so far.
This is how a society looks at itself.
Yeah.
And says, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to have anything to do
my
with
this. My life is easier to take the path of least
so
resistance.
Easier.
Yes, of course.
Absolutely. I'll just sit in my garden and grow my tomatoes. Got nothing against gardens or tomato growers, but you know what I mean.
Of course I do, but you can have it. You can. There's a middle ground. Well, there isn't really, is there? If he comes calling and trying to retain and restore contact, there's a middle ground where you don't open the door, but that involves admitting that you were... God, it's a very amazing dimension that you've brought to the conversation, Margaret.
Can I just make
of course
a quick plug?
Yeah, absolutely.
When I first found out... about Kickface, he who must not be named.
No.
there was no charity that could really help. And there now is. And they're called Restitute. And they're based in Lincolnshire. And they're amazing.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. for bringing that to our attention.
And I'll just say it again, restitute, just Google restitute for anyone who's listening or anyone who's listening who knows about these things. They're a wonderful charity.
Because it's an incredibly lonely place in which to find yourself, and that's probably overlooked. I remember it from our last conversation, but it's overlooked by almost everybody else because, A, there's a little bit of blame. People are often thinking, well, how could you not have known? No matter how could you not? And B, there's a tendency to want to get as far away as possible from issues and stories like this, which leaves you all on your own, all on your own.
Yeah. And now this charity, although they're based in Lincolnshire, they can put out feelers throughout the country to help the women who go to them. Generally women, not always women,
no, of course,
but generally, who are in my position.
Wow. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
It's a genuine pleasure to talk to you, albeit that the territory that we explore together on both of your calls to the programme has been so hideous. And there it is. I mean, this twin track of conversation that we are following this morning. On the one hand, what I see as the insurmountable mystery almost of how people maintained contact with Epstein post 2008. But on the other hand, the hideous conduct of Peter Mandelson, morally hideous in the context of the Epstein connection, but hideous in a different dimension if, as seems probable, he was providing sensitive, market-sensitive information to a paedophile. Information he only had access to because he was at the very top of government, a de facto deputy prime minister during that period of Gordon Brown's premiership. And then back to the 2008 question, because taking money and his husband taking money from Epstein long after the original conviction had come into place. Margaret will take some beating on the first angle. What is it like when this bomb goes off in your life? But there's still, for me, a lot of space on the second angle as well of what is it that this does? It's like thinking of the snake in the Jungle Book, you know, where the snake is money. And it hypnotises people. Would we all be like that? I don't have much nice to say about Jeremy Corbyn over the years, but you have to give him credit for not being remotely materialistic. You know, one of those people, very few people in public life who seem to be entirely, I think he took money from the Iranian regime, but I don't think he did that for the money. I think he did that just to get his face on the telly. Would we all, if someone dangled a big enough carrot in front of us, would we all be able to turn off our consciences? Or is that the wrong way to process this moment, to process this story? Am I coming at it from the wrong angle? Because as the first caller suggested, you either get it because you're part of the problem, or you don't, because you never will. It's 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
There is obviously going to be a question about the Prime Minister's judgment about why he was willing to not engage with finding out the deep links between Mandelson and Epstein before he appointed him as our top man in Washington. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's the fact that Mandelson had these connections with Epstein that meant Mandelson was appointed as the ambassador to the United States. Which would you like to think is worse?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
With over 50 years' experience at
Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:49 is the time. Have a listen to this. I'm trying to get to the heart of what is wrong with the man. There's a bizarre interview on the Times website today, featuring also a photograph on the front page of the Times, which might as well be OK magazine. It's a posed magazine photo shoot, and it was conducted, the bulk of it before the latest revelations. But, it perhaps gives an indication of how the establishment makes excuses for men like this. Because, of course, after the last scandal, the one that saw him removed from the embassy in Washington, he was still popping around to George Osborne's for dinner. But he was asked by the interviewer here why he didn't decide to spend the rest of his life, if you like, in obscurity. Why he wouldn't hide under a rock. His response is, listen to this, hiding under a rock, this is Peter Mandelson talking, hiding under a rock would be a disproportionate response to a handful of misguided historical emails, which I deeply regret sending. If it hadn't been for the emails, I'd still be in Washington. Emails sent all those years ago didn't change the relationship that I had with this monster. And he claims later that he'd forgotten about the emails that he'd sent. And then he says, a friend has said to me, remember, tough times don't last, tough people do. That's the belief I held on to. Someone else said, remember, you are the same person with the same knowledge and the same skills you had before this crisis hit you. There's no shame, is there? Is that the word? Is that the thing that's missing? But I am, and perhaps it's a peculiar interest of mine more than it is of yours, I am interested in what this wealth does, this proximity to wealth. I've got two Mandelson stories of my own. They're not particularly great. One shows you just how intrinsic he was to the New Labour success, but it's not an anecdote, because I was told it by one of the people in the room where it happens. But, well, it is an anecdote, but it's not third, fourth or fifth hand. It's very good quality second hand anecdote. And it was Steve Coogan who told me, actually, who was interviewing Tony Blair on stage at a Labour Party event. I can't remember whether he was doing it in character as Alan Partridge or not, but the three of them are backstage before they go onto the stage. And Mandelson says to Blair, well, when you get out there onto the stage, before you sit down, take your jacket off and roll your sleeves up. And Coogan thought he was joking, because, you know, that is micromanagement on a fairly ridiculous scale. But they did it. They walked out onto the stage, and Coogan's watching as Blair takes his jacket off, puts it on the back of the sofa, I think, or the chair that they were sitting on the stage. I think at party conference, maybe, or somewhere like that. And then he rolls his sleeves up and sits down. So that's the level of influence that he had back in the day. And then the second anecdote is a slightly stranger one. When I got a message off a very close colleague and friend, saying, oh, Mandelson's in the building and he really wants to meet you. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. This is like 5 years ago. So before the current round of scandal. And so I thought I'll pop downstairs. It was in this building. I'll pop downstairs and say hello. I'm slightly flattered that someone as important as Peter Mandelson has expressed a desire to meet your humble correspondent. But it was a strange, I said to my producer at the time, I said it was a weird experience that. I felt like I was almost sort of venturing into a web. It was like, I said, I can't get the words exactly right. It was like being summoned to a spider's web. That's the phrase I used, isn't it? To you. I said to you, it was like being summoned to a spider's web. And that is actually what it felt like. Sitting in the middle of this web, just As I said, these are not exactly earth-shattering or career-ending anecdotes, but they're part of this process that we're embarked upon today. Kaleem is in Manchester. Kaleem, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, good morning, James. How are you?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Well, I think you have touched on, you know, sort of the roots of the issues here. I think Mandelson, as a case in point, is somebody who was clearly very gifted in terms of his core competence, being a spin doctor.
That's a bit of management speak for us there. Core competence, nice one.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
sorry,
lots of people with high core competence who would never ever dream of going on holiday with a paedophile.
Correct. And I think the underside, the flip side of that coin is clearly a deep issues around sort of liking that high life, being close to power. And I think the issue is that, you know, him and like anyone else, we are all corruptible, flawed beings.
It's funny, you're probably going to be the last caller this hour, but the first caller said the opposite. Said that it wouldn't be, we couldn't happen to all of us. I think I'm a bit closer to you on this.
I think we could. You give somebody $1 billion.
Yeah.
Right, and then put them in a position where, you know, they sort of completely become sort of almost untouchable and become a celebrity. You know, we only need to look at sort of all the young footballers, all sorts of people who come into great wealth who then go off the tracks. Yeah, it can happen to any of us. The other issue here, so obviously great money and sort of access to power is highly corruptible. I think the other issue, the bigger point is that the more powerful you are, the more open to questioning and transparency is needed.
It doesn't apply to the likes of us. That's why the Fitzgerald quote is so powerful. They think deep in their hearts that they are better than we are. Mandelson wasn't born rich, but he.
Correct.
But it's not just the money that hypnotizes him. It's also this view of the world. It's not just the money that you're fetishizing or being reverential towards, although that's part of it. It's also this mindset that comes with great wealth, this belief that great wealth proves you're a better person, you are a superior human being. You must be, because you've got so much more money than everybody else. I want a little bit of that pie, please.
There were experiments done where two people were playing Monopoly. One person was given more money, more rolls of the dice, yeah? And within 30 minutes, that person was convinced they were a better player.
This is my favourite line about being born 3-0 up and thinking you've scored a hat-trick, or to give it its American provenance, to be born on third base and you think you've scored a triple, and it goes with it, doesn't it? But you see, Peter Mandelson probably was cleverer than everyone he ever met as a kid. You know,
exactly.
He probably was.
Of course he was.
And what's the point of being this clever if I'm not also rich?
Well, I think so. And, you know, it's sort of, you know, it's a confluence of sort of wealth, talent, some personal shortcomings, and he's ended up going down a road which obviously is now very difficult to back out of.
Well, and I mean, that's why this interview in the Times is simultaneously ridiculous and interesting, because he didn't think that he had gone down a road he wouldn't be able to back out of, and if he ever did think that, then it would only be this weekend. I mean, there's so much here. The photograph of him in his pants, which we touched on yesterday, it's almost impossible to comprehend. I don't know, because Margaret in Catterick, who has, as with the first time she rang the programme, prompted an absolute cavalcade of admiration, gratitude and compliment, to which I add my voice, she was not corruptible. When she found herself facing that Rubicon, where either she sets fire to her entire life, because she's found images of child sex abuse on her ex-husband's on Gitface's computer. She was not corruptible. Many, many people in the same situation would be. In fact, let me read you this. It's quite long, but it's really interesting, from Charlotte. I work as a forensic social worker in a secure hospital with people who have done all kinds of horrific crimes. Some have psychotic illnesses, some personality disorders. In my role, we obviously get the full unabridged details of those crimes. And the thing that always shocked me most when I first started doing this job was how normal the patients are when you actually meet them. We have lots of issues with staff becoming too relaxed around patients, and we do a lot of work with them regarding boundaries regularly, because at the end of the day, people are just people, and once you get to know people, you naturally relax around them. I don't believe people are simply good or evil. After doing this job for years, there's absolutely good and bad in every single person, no matter what heinous crimes they have committed. And some people, sadly, just become products of their environments and the people they surround themselves with. I think human beings are like sponges. We soak up what we surround ourselves with. I also think it's natural for humans to want to fit in and move up the social hierarchy. And unfortunately, that means people who rise up exploit those lower down. I don't think that takes away their humanity, and I think this is why people can maintain relationships with people who do horrific things. Loads of really interesting messages and WhatsApps today. Apologies for not reading out more of them, but I will think of them and indeed refer back to the points that you make and the stories that you share whenever we find ourselves addressing territory like this. It is just coming up to 11 o'clock. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where a bit like a couple of weeks ago when I couldn't really muster up enthusiasm for any other story. I've got a slight sense of that with regard to the Epstein files, but I sense we should move on to different territory. And there is obviously quite a lot going on in the world, including yet another development in the plight or the fate of the British High Street. I presume you don't want to talk about another resident doctor's strike.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, there are calls for a public inquiry after Lord Mandelson was accused of leaking sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein. Documents appear to show the former minister sent government data to Epstein by email in 2009. Downing Street has ordered an urgent review into Lord Mandelson's conduct while he was a minister, but the Liberal Democrat leader, Sir Ed Davey, says Sir Keir Starmer has to go further.
For someone right at the top of government to be leaking on a daily basis, really serious issues. I think in due course we need a national inquiry, a public inquiry into the impact on national security and indeed British victims of Epstein. The fact that a Deputy Prime Minister, Secretary of State for Business, should be able to do this, and then it not being known about in Whitehall, so he's appointed to the ambassador of the United States, is quite extraordinary.
Peter Mandelson hasn't responded to the latest revelations, but has previously denied any wrongdoing. A 13-year-old boy has been arrested over a suspected hit-and-run e-bike crash with a pregnant woman. Her baby, who was born after last Monday's crash in Poole, remains in a serious condition. The teenager is being held on suspicion of a driving offence. Prosecutors in Paris have raided the French headquarters of Elon Musk's social media platform X. Officials say they're widening an investigation into algorithms and data to include complaints over the AI chatbot Grok. More Palestinians are expected to pass through the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt later, following its reopening yesterday. 5 patients left Gaza on Monday and 12 were allowed to return. 20,000 people are said to be waiting to leave for medical treatment. And NASA has delayed the launch of its manned rocket to the moon until March at the earliest. Engineers discovered a fuel leak during testing for the Artemis 2 mission. Megan Christian is a reserve astronaut at the UK Space Agency.
The wet dress rehearsal went well, but it didn't go perfectly. And if you're going to send humans to space, it needs to go perfectly. So I wouldn't say that it's a huge surprise. You know, if any little issue came up, then they were going to delay it.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 12 at 10,329. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 11 is the time. I feel the need not for speed, but for a gentler read. It doesn't quite work because we're talking, not reading, aren't we? But I read generally before I decide what I'm going to talk to you about. And sometimes I see something in the news and my heart sinks because I know how it will be handled by, I don't know what we would describe them as. They're sort of, I like the phrase lazy tabloid sensibilities, but it's much more serious than that, because lazy tabloid sensibilities brought this country Boris Johnson, Brexit, Liz Truss, austerity, quite possibly going to bring this country Nigel Farage. It's certainly lazy tabloid sensibilities that treat him with anything other than the contempt he so clearly deserves. Lazy tabloid sensibilities turn hideous people into superstars and prime ministers. Lazy tabloid sensibilities. And it's probably only since I started doing this job quite a long time ago that I realised how it works. You just look for the easiest possible entry point with which to rile people up. So when some very, very well-meaning people, a charity funded mostly by the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, recognise the beauty and importance of getting people who do not currently have a relationship with the countryside into the countryside, when they announce their desire to make the countryside more welcoming to ethnic minorities, if you are possessed of the lazy tabloid sensibilities, have no interest in other human beings except insofar as you can make them angry while being a little bit bigoted, then you turn this into a conversation about, is the countryside racist? Which we've all heard. And then lots of people listening think that they're being called racist. So they ring in and to say, well, I'm not racist. And of course, lots of people from ethnic minorities who live in the countryside ring in to say, well, I've been made very welcome. And you completely miss both the nuance and the point of what is being done. There is a reason why the word urban has become in musical circles synonymous with black. Urban music. Because ethnic minorities are massively more likely to live and exist in cities than they are in the countryside. And that's a shame, because the countryside, as some polling published today confirms, is a life-changing experience. Being close to the countryside is more important when looking for a place to live than being near a good school and family. And we're going to get into the why of it shortly. But before that, just another word on this charity National Landscapes, which is trying to make the countryside more welcoming to, you could say, ethnic minorities if you wanted to. I would go rather with people from backgrounds that do not automatically recognise the beauty and the power of the countryside. I've got two stories for you, one from real life, one I think from the phones on the show over the... Oh, did a teacher tell us a story once about a lad who was frightened of a cow? Did they went on a school trip to a city farm, so they weren't even going into the sticks. We took a call from a teacher who took a bunch of kids on a trip to a city farm, and there was a lad who refused to get off the bus because he was terrified. He got off, went into the, saw a cow, turned around, ran back. Now, how impossible do you find that to believe? I mean, I grew up on a farm, so it wasn't, I don't think we had, it wasn't a cow farm. It was an arable farm. I grew up in an old farmhouse that had been, you know, done up by property developers, but the farm around it was still farmed. You'd often be woken up by the sound of a tractor or a combine harvester. In fact, you know what woke me up more often than anything else? The water sprayers that would go on throughout the summer, like that really constant pshh, 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 just outside my bedroom window. So I grew up in the countryside is the point that I'm making. And I had friends who were farmers. I always remember one lad, Matthew, who I used to get annoyed with mum when she'd send me out to fill up the coal scuttle. He had to go out and sort of chop logs and muck out the pigs. I mean, his list of chores when he was about 11 or 12 would probably have been condemned by William Blake during Victorian times. But it was normal for him. And And so, for me, it's absolutely second nature. Despite the fact that I've lived in London since I was 19 and I currently live in Brentford, I have the countryside in my bones. I have the countryside in my blood. So I found it both hilarious and shocking when I was told a story about a little boy who'd never seen a cow before. Let's say he was 11, 12 years old. He wasn't 5 or 6. It was secondary school, first year of secondary school, who'd never seen a cow before. And he was terrified of it. And then the other story, which I think I've told you before, when I lived in a little bit more centrally, I lived just near Ladbroke Grove, if you're familiar with London, on what had been a social housing estate, but certainly wasn't anymore, although some of the social housing properties remained. It hadn't all been gentrified and bought under Thatcher's legislation, but my house obviously had. And we had chickens in the back garden for a job Mrs. O'Brien was doing for the Times newspaper about foraging and you know, the things you could do in a city that involved living off the land or whatever it may be. And the chickens, spoiler alert, laid eggs. And the lad next door, who I don't think had ventured very far beyond the postcode in which we lived in his life, the lad next door was in the back garden when I was out mucking out the chickens and bringing the eggs in. So I offered him a couple of eggs, and he was literally like, "Oh, no way, no way, man." And I'm like, why not? Why don't you want a couple of eggs? And he goes, "Because they've just come out of that chicken's bum." And I said, "Yeah, but do you like eggs?" He goes, "Yeah, but I'll get my eggs from the supermarket, thank you very much." And I remember thinking, this is extraordinary. Do you believe that story? Because if you told me that story, I don't know that I would have believed you. I've got no problem with eggs. The eggs I don't want are the ones that, if you were driving around rural Norfolk, you'd pay a premium for because they're so fresh and they've just come out of a chicken. Don't send me any messages about the anatomical reality of chickens and egg production. I know it didn't come out of the chicken's bum, but that's what the lad next door thought. And there's, I mean, I stood there with these eggs in my hand, sort of think, what do I do? Well, no, go on, but they're so, well, because you're right, it has, it's just come out of the chicken, it's still warm. I thought that was magical and almost romantic. How I'd feel this chicken's egg, if this egg is still warm. And he thought it was the most disgusting thing. It was literally as if I'd just offered him a hare sandwich or something like that. He was going, no, what, chicken's egg? So you've got the lad who's frightened of cows and the lad who's frightened of eggs. That's why it's a good idea to make the countryside more welcoming to people who don't ordinarily or regularly go to the countryside. And whether it is helpful or not to include in that analysis the fact that people from ethnic minorities are demonstrably less likely to go to the countryside, I don't know. That's why my heart sinks, because I can hear. I can hear the I can read the newspaper editorial. Oh, now they think the countryside's racist. I can hear the lazy phone. Oh, it's the countryside racist. But what it's really about is trying to extend knowledge, appreciation, understanding of the countryside to people who don't currently have it. So, and listen, there's a bit of white privilege here as well. I've never walked into a room where I am a different colour from everybody else in it. That's never really happened to, well, maybe it has, but I certainly didn't feel threatened by it or alarmed by it. But if I was going in the countryside or any encounter where I was very conscious of being the only a black person in the room, then I would obviously have an emotional reaction very different from the one that I'm describing to you now. It's not a friend of mine. I've only met him a couple of times, but he's a brilliant, brilliant man. David Lindo. I don't know if you've ever come across him. He is called the urban birder. Not because he's black, although he is, but because he goes bird watching in the city. I went out on Wormwood Scrubs with him once about 15 years ago. And he showed me a kestrel. It just loves birds, which I have developed an enthusiasm for a bit later in life. But you can get the passion for the countryside, even if you're living in a city. It's about helping people towards the passion. So we're going to have a very strange phone-in now, because 52, 48, it won't be that. For a large number of people listening, this phone-in will appear to be a little bit ridiculous. But this isn't for you or for me. This is a phone-in for the kids who are frightened of cows and eggs. This is a phone-in for them, because this is a phone-in about why and how The Countryside changes your life. Countryside beats schools when choosing new home, which is a beautifully middle-class framing of the story from the Times this morning, and yet that is how the polling was conducted. 73% of people said that proximity to rural areas was important. 47%, almost 48, said that being close to a good school was important. So the number, and obviously this is going to be skewed by demographics and age, but it comes top. It's more important than being near a good school. It's more important than being near your work. It's more important than being near your family. It is more important than even having low council tax. It is, of course, there are negatives, transport links, and similar, but the and there are some other things that, transport links, low crime levels and green spaces score a little bit more highly than the countryside. But the big takeaway from this is very simply that people value being close to the countryside more than they value being near school, near work or near family. And I want you to tell me why, but I want you to tell me why with those two young men in mind. The one that's frightened of cows and the one that's frightened of eggs, fresh eggs, because they've just come out of a chicken. What does it do? Because it's also a phone-in for the rest of us, isn't it? Because we've never put it into words before. During lockdown, the thing I missed the most, apart from my mum, was the big sky. I suddenly noticed one day, I was living on a terrace at the time, and the view from the back garden was our back garden, next door's back garden, the back garden on the other side, and the back garden of the people that we backed onto. That was the view. Could go out to the Thames, but the sky wasn't that big. There were buildings in it. And the bit of England that I missed the most was North Norfolk, where, particularly if you get to the North Sea coast, you can, on a good day, not see another person. To the left of you, to the right of you, ahead of you, and certainly not above you. I couldn't believe that I found myself missing the big sky so much. And I can put that into words. It reminds you that you are small. It reminds you that you are meaningless in the great scheme of things. It's healthy to think about. If you're stressed or you're worried about this or you're worried about that, it's helpful sometimes to remember that, you know, in the context of our universe, you're not even a grain of sand on a beach for the amount of time that you're going to spend alive on this planet. I don't know. I just love all that. But I'd never put it into words until lockdown. And I've never put it into words regarding the countryside. So there are two stories sitting alongside each other in the news this morning. The first involves attempts to make the countryside more welcoming for ethnic minorities or, I prefer, for people who don't go there. People who have no connection to nature because their parents and grandparents didn't go there. They had other preoccupations or they didn't feel safe there. That is a simple and sympathetic description that we should resist any temptation to turn it into. It is the countryside racist. It's about what people have experienced and why they haven't done something. And then you have the other story, which is about why people value being close to the countryside more than they value a good school or being near their family or being near their work. And I want to have a crack if I can, or I want you to have a crack if you can, at simply explaining why. Why does being close to the countryside change everything? And explain it to somebody who, to quote from this report, explain it to somebody who has no connection to nature. Because I can't. I don't think I can. I might try. But it's such an odd thing, if you grew up in the countryside, to even conceive of somebody who has no connection to nature. That's why I thought that story about the eggs is quite hard to believe. So he's making it up. The boy running away from the cow and refusing to get back off the bus, he's making it up. But I'm not. Point one. And point two, when you think about it, if you use that phrase, no connection to nature, it makes sense. It becomes believable. So 0345 6060973 is the number you need, very simply, to explain to somebody who has no connection to nature why they should try to get one as soon as possible. I really want you to join in on this. What is it that it puts into your life that would not otherwise be there. Because it's not something that we talk about or think about much. And the whole point of this campaign from National Landscapes is that the people who would most benefit from this conversation are, of course, the people who don't currently have a connection with the countryside. So, you know, whether it is the kid who ran away from the cow, who I think, if memory serves, was from an ethnic minority. I think the teacher told us it was an Asian lad. Or my next-door neighbour, who was white, but was frightened of warm eggs because they'd just come out of a chicken. If you've been raised in a way that just doesn't have the countryside in it, explain to those people why it is such a wonderful and valuable and important thing. All right? Hit the numbers now. You will get through. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job. Done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Forest bathing? Really? The real secret to feeling young can be found in the new Seat Ibiza and new Arona. Both have smart new looks and stylish new interiors. Plus, new alloy wheels and a 6-speaker sound system. Seat. Rolling young.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Rocky Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Aldous Plays, Mia Cats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood, and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The fun ride.
Book now at notcatch.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 11 is the time. I don't know if you were listening yesterday. I think we only put one person in Idiot's Corner, didn't we? There was a person ringing in to wonder why a caller had tied the Epstein files in with Brexit. And the answer, of course, was the lens of Donald Trump, through which things only make sense if you understand that racism, misogyny and climate change denial are at the heart of absolutely everything. And people like Steve Bannon, who Nigel Farage credited with playing a big role in Brexit, who was very good mates with Epstein and with Trump. I mean, the links are clear, but they get clearer. And I should have had this in front of me yesterday. So Epstein wrote to Peter Thiel, the fellow that runs Palantir, part of the PayPal crew, who are kind of buying up the world in a way. And Epstein wrote, "Return to tribalism, counter to globalization, amazing new alliances. You and I both agreed zero interest rates were too high. And as I said in your office, finding things on their way to collapse was much easier than finding the next bargain." And Thiel responds by saying, "Of what?" So responds to Jeffrey Epstein and says, what are you talking about? And Jeffrey Epstein replies, "Brexit. Just the beginning." It's mad, isn't it? Do people still talk about Brexit derangement syndrome? The people who talked about Trump derangement syndrome until it became clear that Trump's critics hadn't even got close to fully chronicling the extent of his depravity and corruption. Do we still do that? Moral corruption? Or indeed, as Simon Marks was talking to us about yesterday with regard to the crypto coin deal with the UAE, possibly more traditional forms as well. But there it is, you know, there's Brexit smack in the middle of Jeffrey Epstein's billionaire network. Funny that, isn't it? Anyway, that's not what we're talking about this hour. We're trying to persuade people who are frightened of cows and warm eggs that they need more countryside in their life. Helen is in Rochdale. Helen, what would you like to say?
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good.
I actually found that quite humorous, being scared of warm eggs.
Well, did you believe it, though?
No.
Well, it's true. I promise you it's true.
Because my friend used to have chickens, and I was brought up in Ireland, and we're right in the thicket of the countryside. And I was brought up down in County Cork, so being around animals, we always had like cats, dogs. I think we had a goat at one point. I wasn't brought up on a farm, just my family lived in the country. And across the road was a farm. We used to play over at the farm as well. But for me, I feel like instilling this in my children is important too.
Why?
Even though I live... Just because I think it humanizes you as a person. I don't know, you get more empathetic for the animals than rounds you out as a person. I just feel different to people living in the city. So
this is tricky, isn't it? Because this is, in some ways, the message you and I send, because I kind of agree with you.
Yeah.
The message we're sending to people who think they're perfectly happy with their life, thank you very much, is that their life is somehow less than ours.
Yeah.
Isn't it? We don't mean to say you need to be more like us, your life will be better, but we are saying that, and it's probably true.
Yeah. But even you have a pet and you start to appreciate your pet, and it just makes you a different person. I don't know. I can't really explain it.
Well, that's the phone-in, Helen. You have to explain it. That's the bloody point.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm very nervous.
Oh, don't be. It's only me. But it is. It is something that you feel in your bones and your blood. And imagine if you'd never had that, if you'd grown up with no connection to the countryside whatsoever. You don't know who you'd be.
No. Yeah. Well, I said, because obviously moving over to England was very different.
Yes.
So for me, I was actually terrified for a bit.
Of what?
Just the life was very different, you know, from being in the country.
Sure. I mean, probably you'd have felt that way if you'd moved to Dublin. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. And I was terrified of Dublin too.
Sure. It's country town, isn't it? So how do you give the kids what they're not going to get in the same ways that you got it?
You teach them as a parent.
But what do you teach them?
Well, I've always felt it important. When they were younger, we went a bit crazy after lockdown. We bought all our kids pets.
Okay.
And so we have a snake.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get many of them in Ireland.
No.
Not since Saint Pat did his thing.
No. Not since.
If you know, you know.
We've got a hamster and we've got a parrot and.
Yeah, I mean that's not the countryside, Helen. That means you've got a parrot in a cage in Rochdale. That's not exactly introducing your children to the delights of rolling hills and dales.
Oh, he's barely in his cage, believe me.
All right, but no, I know what you mean. It takes them out of themselves in some way. So that's livestock. I, you know, not a word you use often to describe a hamster, but it is. I mean, there's something there. You understand the point that Helen is making. But as she said herself, I can't really put it into words. How do you open up the outdoors to new audiences? So this is better. Northumberland Coast's Generation Green 2 project. Listen to this sentence and compare it to, is the countryside racist? Children from some of the UK's most deprived areas are invited to pick litter and build sandcastles on the beach and to go on weekly walks for all in Arnside and Silverdale. People with dementia and brain injuries are also looked after by National Landscape. In Luton, there's a project called Nature Calling, which coordinates visits from groups from all backgrounds, including even, don't tell the Daily Mail, asylum seekers who have been stuck indoors largely since arriving in the UK. And that thing that they're being given is what we are trying to describe. What are they being given that they don't currently have? Because if you grew up with it in your pocket, you didn't know it was valuable. You still possibly don't. Wesley is in Charnock Richard in Lancashire. Wesley, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yeah, long time listener, first time caller.
Welcome.
I moved from West Eden, London, to Charnock Richard.
And do you know, I've got in front of me a note from the producer that says, and you may find this a little bit hard to believe, Wesley, it says, don't forget to talk about train spotting. And West Ealing is, in fact, the station at which I, for the very first time in my life, went train spotting at the weekend. But I am not going to talk about that yet, because I want to listen to what you've got to say. What changed from West Ealing to Charnock Richard?
I think I would call it a digital disconnect.
Oh.
And a movement from the urban jungle to a more rural location has definitely been good for my mental health.
Why? Why? Try. Because it's really, really hard to put it into words. Because what you're describing is something that you just feel. And what Helen was describing a minute ago was something that she's just lived. But I want you to try to put it into words. I know what the words mental health means, but tell me about what you're describing.
I think it's a case of being out in nature and seeing the seasons change and seeing how that kind
what
of...
What does that do? What does seeing the seasons change do to you?
It gives you awareness of the globe that we're spinning on, I think, and that the fact that we're not just connected to work, we're also connected to nature.
That's like the sky for me then, isn't it? It's that sense of being simultaneously part of something incredible and not very important. It's good to not feel important, because if you don't feel important, you don't feel as stressed as you did when you thought everything in was important.
Absolutely. And talking about cows, true story, I live behind the, well, there's a field behind my house. We moved in 5 years ago in the summer, and the cows were released a few weeks later. And I was just doing my bits and bobs around the house in the early evening, and I saw a bull over the fence. And I thought we were under attack, so I had to let the family know that the cows had been released.
Do you have a little frisson of fear?
I was a little bit taken aback. Yeah. I must admit, I was a little bit taken aback to see a bull over my my garden fence.
You would be. It was normal when I was growing up, but certainly my school as well always had animals. I used to have sheep on the rugby pitches. So I won't even tell you, I'll let you imagine what our legs looked like after we'd been tackling each other after they got rid of the sheep and re-put down the lines on the rugby pitch. Why did you move there, if you don't mind me asking?
The wife's a northerner. She drove me up north.
Okay. So it's near Chorley. You're near Chorley. So you are really out in the open, out in the green.
I am indeed.
No regrets?
No regrets. Just about to go and walk the dog now.
I see. And that's a big difference as well. Lockdown drove this home. A lot of people moved out during lockdown, but the ones that I know moved back. They found things about the countryside that they couldn't bear, but it had nothing to do with the things about the countryside that we're attempting to detail today, which is the life-changing elements. And how do we get into the deprivation question? Or the ethnic minority angle, if you prefer. How do you make the countryside more welcoming for people who never go there, who've never been there? I honestly wouldn't know where to begin. I'll tell you what not to do. Don't offer them warm eggs that have still got a bit of chicken poo on them. I only just said the words chicken poo because there are about 14 children looking at me through the glass window at the moment, and I thought they'd like that. I was tailoring my material for the audience, but they didn't even notice. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
The Liberal Democrats have called for a public inquiry after Lord Mandelson was accused of leaking sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein. Documents appear to show that he forwarded email while he was business secretary under Gordon Brown. A 13-year-old boy has been arrested over a suspected hit-and-run e-bike crash with a pregnant woman. Her baby, who was born after last Monday's crash in Poole, remains in a serious condition. And prosecutors in Paris have raided the French headquarters of Elon Musk's social media platform X. Officials say they're widening an investigation into algorithms and data to include complaints over the AI chatbot Grok. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most, some hill snow for parts of Wales and the east of Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Everything breakfast at Ocado. Save on yogurt, cereal and get a great price on milk so you can splurge on eggs, even from quails. Perfect if you have the urge to eat a dozen eggs but you aren't that hungry. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Select lines only, geographical restrictions, minimum spend and charges apply. Offers end 24th of Feb. Terms and offer info at ocado.com/terms.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. So turn up that dial.
The EuroMillions jackpot is £14 million.
Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandang-a-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, okay. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 11:33 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we are having a slightly strange conversation, but I think the more you think about it, the less strange it becomes, about people who have no connection with the countryside. The obvious question to ask is, what does that connection constitute? What does it give you? But the second question, which we haven't addressed yet, is, how do you do it? How do you make the countryside more welcoming to people who aren't middle class, to people who don't have a connection with the countryside? It is something that is seen. There's a report by DEFRA in 2019 that described many communities in this country perceiving the countryside as being for white people and middle class people. So this is what I mean by lazy tabloid sensibilities. That is how people feel. And regardless of whether you agree with them or not, you don't change how they feel. And if people feel that somewhere is unwelcoming, then the challenge is to make it more welcoming, even if the challenge is met simply by persuading them that it wasn't unwelcoming in the first place. Do you see what I mean about laziness? That's mental, intellectual laziness. What is the goal here? Well, the goal is to bring the countryside into as many lives as you possibly can. Versus, what is the goal here? Well, the goal here is to get people very angry and to lie to them that they're being accused of racism. It's just such a shame when you see a good scheme like this so obviously vulnerable to lazy tabloid sensibilities. So how do you do it? How do you make the countryside, somebody who feels that the countryside is not welcoming to them, how do you make them feel that they have nothing to fear? Cows can be frightening. I'm not going to do a phone-in on this because I'm not working for North Norfolk Digital anymore. But you can be frightened by cows, particularly if you go near a calf and the mother is on the other side of the field, or a sort of adolescent cow. I'm not making light of any of that, but people can get killed by stampeding cows. Happens in this country. But the warm egg, no one is going to justify being frightened of an egg because it's just come out of a chicken, whereas you'd be perfectly happy to eat them if they'd just come out of a supermarket. Jamie's in Boscastle. Jamie, what would you like to say?
Well, you're throwing me there with all the egg stuff.
It's still warm.
So I'm not quite sure how we get people to make the connection, but we need to eradicate that obviously racist slant that people are trying to put on it. I guess experience is the way to counter it. And yes, when people come to the country, like it's been touched on, some of those smaller villages, the most friendly places in the world.
You said it's chicken and egg. Sorry, but well, it is though, isn't it? Because it's welcoming. But people who won't feel, how do you welcome someone who doesn't come? You can't. How do you make them know that if they did come, they would be welcome? But move instead, if you would, to the, what do you get out of it? Have you lived both? Have you lived urban and rural, or have you always been rural?
Yes, so I've lived both. I've brought up on the North Cornish coast and looking out to sea now.
Yes.
And, we all moved up to London, the age of sort of 16, and I spent my raving days, I'm a couple of years older than you, in Ladbroke Grove. It was nice to hear you talking about that. And but when I became pregnant with my daughter, who's now 26, was kind of troubled by where I was going to bring her up.
Yeah.
London's great, it's fun, exciting, everything happens there. But what did I want her to see as normal? And that's what I think the countryside gives people, is that sense of normalcy. And if anyone can try and promote that for the general population there, regardless of creed or colour, so
you know, we find our place, don't we? You touched on it with the big skies.
Yeah.
I've always looked out on an unbroken horizon. That's my thing.
Yeah.
It gives me a free focus. But having said that, people used to find that. My friend Toby, who I used to rave with when I was 25, I used to tell him about the beach I used to sit on in North Cornwall, where on a big winter swell, the rocks would be picked up and then dashed down, and you could hear each individual rock. And it'd be amazing, this great roar, but these little pinpoints of... But he had his own version in London, under the M40. There's a little school, and there'd be the roar of the motorway. And then at playtime, there's a little school, and he could hear the tinkling of the kids' laughter. And so we're all seeking it in some way, but where do we find it now?
Yeah, except that. Yeah. I think you wouldn't benefit much from being introduced to what he described. It wouldn't add a new dimension to your life particularly, but he would benefit from being introduced to what you described. So I take your point. There's a touch of kind of relativism in play, but the countryside is timeless and universal, and that is what you tap into. The problem is, and I didn't foresee this, it's happened now with me and with every caller, is that because we feel it so acutely, we actually struggle to articulate it. We actually struggle to put into words what it is that the people listening who might be frightened of a warm egg are lacking in their lives. And even that, I hate that language, because it sounds as if you're, you know, denigrating or criticising.
I think it puts us in our place in the universe, as hippie as that sounds.
It doesn't sound
but
hippie.
We need that. We need that to temper the crazy... I can't articulate it.
You've articulated it really well. It teaches us our place in the universe. You cannot learn your place in the universe under the M40.
Yeah.
Can
yeah,
you? Yeah. You can't. You've got to be looking at an unbroken horizon, or you've got to be. And I guess what I'm conscious of is a sort of innate snobbery, almost as if we're telling people. I hate people who speak as if they talked about in the first hour that they have some inherent superiority. But this isn't something you're born with. This is something that's given to you. If you're lucky enough to be born where Jamie was born, in Boscastle in North Cornwall, then it is given to you by the circumstances of your birth. I suppose it's an inheritance in a way, but it's something that everybody then has access to. What are the words? What words would you use to describe it? The thing that you get. Ah, Neil's on the Black Isle in the Scottish Highlands, and he is a wordsmith. Neil Lancaster is a brilliant author, and therefore will no doubt rise easily to the challenge of articulating what the rest of us are struggling with. And for people who don't know, Neil worked for the Met until about 2015, so we're talking about smack in the middle of the city and exposed to some of its worst excesses, and then up to the Scottish Highlands. So you better be good, mate, after that introduction.
Well, I thank you very much for that introduction. I'm very, very grateful. But as I sit here in my office attempting to finish a book, which I'm slightly struggling with, I think I'm distracted by the view. Because I do not exaggerate when I say, and anybody who wants to look on my social media, because I bore people to death with it, I can see 65, 70 miles from my window to the Cairngorm Mountains, uninterrupted. It's the connection to the reality of life that makes it important to me. I'm surrounded by arable fields on all sides, so I watch the seasons pass. I can see where I am, where we are in the cycle now by what's happening in the fields in front of me. What's the farmer currently doing? You know, I get excited by harvest.
Yeah.
You know, I get excited when the combines start turning up. You know, when my grandson was up the other day, who's a big tractor fiend, he was nearly going crazy about all the tractors and the combines and everything going on there. And I mean, a few nights ago, James, I've never seen anything like it. And your previous caller talked about it making you feel small,
yeah,
and irrelevant, because we're on the, I'll call the local Facebook groups on the Black Isle, and it flashed up, Aurora's live outside now. So we dash outside. It was a moonless night, and it was a cloudless night, and I've quite literally never seen anything like it. Norway would have been disappointed with what they currently had on. It was bright red and bright green in the sky above my house.
What did that do? Because, I mean, I can close my eyes and picture it, and I have a feeling of what you felt. But what if you were describe if If Max Craigie had been, which is the hero of Neil's books, for anyone who doesn't know, if Max Craigie had been there and he'd rushed out into the darkness and you were now writing what he felt, what would you write?
I would write that Max, who is actually a Black Isler by birth,
yes,
felt irrelevant. He felt unimportant. He felt that he was just a speck of dust. Because nothing he does matters in the grand scheme of things.
And that's good because...
Because it puts us into our play. We think we're really important. We all think we're unbelievably important. And of course, day to day, to the people around us, and, you know, politicians can have enormous impacts on people's lives. But in the grand scheme of things, it makes you feel small. It makes you feel unimportant, but in a good way.
In a good
and
way.
And it makes you feel grounded.
So a lot of young people doing their mocks at the moment. A lot of people worrying about, they might have a boss they don't get on with. All of the things that can dominate our inner life, our inner discourse, often don't matter much. But it's so hard to get the perspective that you need to recognise that they don't matter much. And that's what you're describing.
People think that what they put on social media matters and that they're upset that their Twitter post didn't get enough likes.
Yeah.
Well, really, have a look up into the night sky when it's moonless. Look at the Milky Way. You know, you can only really see that from the countryside because there's too much light pollution. I have no light pollution here. On a moonless night, I can go outside to take the dog out before we go to bed and I can spend 15 minutes out there. Because I can't stop looking up.
What were you like when you lived in London? Did you still commune with nature? Because you've done. I mean, when you're in the military police, you were in the Falklands for a spell, I think. So you're not exactly new to rural territory or big spaces. But what were you like when you were in the Met?
Because you get taken over.
Yeah.
By the day to day just existence. I also have a theory about living either in London or in the commuter belt, like I used to live in the commuter belt, is you become obsessed by the day-to-day of it all.
Indeed.
And there is this tension in the air on the train when you're sat with hundreds and hundreds of other people, of everyone having to get into town to pay their enormous mortgages.
Yeah.
And, you know, you come out here, you look up at the sky, you watch the seasons pass, I can see it's going to be raining. Well, I can see that it's going to be snowing in about 40 minutes. I can judge that because I can see it coming. And then that's really what's important. That's really what gives us our place on the planet. Not whether, you know, I can afford the latest iPhone 17 or whatever.
To be clear, it's not either or, is it? But you just don't let the more trivial stuff dominate your existence if you are in touch with the timeless and the universal, the huge stuff.
It can be mind-clearing as well. I never planned to be a writer until I hit the Highlands and found myself with time and space that I needed to fill. And I needed to fill with something. And, you know, because part of the reason I left the Met when I did is that I'd been unwell for a year with something that I unfortunately got over. Mm. And I don't want to be dealing with the small stuff anymore. Oh, I want to go and clear my mind. I want to go and give my family something new. I want my son to appreciate the seasons and my son to see the tractors walking, you know, driving by the house and everything. And it worked. And it gave me the space to think, I feel the need to write. And I don't think that would happen.
You're absolutely right. It wouldn't, because something flowered inside you. Something was expanding inside you. And the space it expanded into was the space where you became a writer. 12 books in now, is it now?
Something like that, yeah. I don't know, it keeps going up. The next one's out next month, which is absolutely awesome.
What's it called?
It's called The Dark Heart. Fantastic. I think you might even have a copy, actually.
I was just coming to that, actually. So it's next on my list. And Andy's got one as well, hasn't he?
Oh, he has, yeah. No, he's a top man.
So are you, Neil. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And what a beautiful way to highlight the difference between urban and rural living and the importance of somehow finding ways to help people who only have experience of urban to embrace experiences of rural. And the first thing you do is strip away any sense that you won't be welcome or that you won't be comfortable there. And that's why this is so important, this initiative. It is 11:47.
LBC. This morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Lord Mandelson, the latest developments there, possible police involvement, possible passing on of sensitive information. Catherine Baroness MacLeod, who was special advisor to Alistair Darling while he was Chancellor at the time when these emails were allegedly passed on.
Well, I don't know if he sold secrets to Epstein. He certainly gave them away, and I think it's reprehensible.
Minister for Secondary Care at the Department of Health, Karen Smith.
I think we're all shocked about the revelations in those emails, and it is right that the Prime Minister took action to make sure the Cabinet Secretary does investigate.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations, and Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Prices check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum. Again.
May Hawkers stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 11:50. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I should have said, when I said to Neil a moment ago that Andy's got one as well, you wouldn't have known what on earth I was talking about. And Andy Hughes, our crime editor here at LBC, unsurprisingly, has Neil Lancaster, former undercover Metropolitan Police officer and now brilliant crime author, in his contact book as well. 11:51 is the time. Conversation, a strange one, but sometimes it's nice to go a little bit off-piste, isn't it? And in fact, in some ways, countryside involves going off-piste for people who live in cities. The value of it, trying to communicate to people who just don't know why it is valuable. Such a hard thing to do without sounding pompous or condescending or even a bit snobbish. Oh, you've never been to the countryside. Oh, you'd love it, you would. Oh, what a shame. Oh, you poor thing. It's a bit like trying to tell someone that something they've had no knowledge or experience of would improve their lives. Very, very hard to do. Harder than I thought it would be, but definitely, definitely, definitely worth trying. Phil is in Ross-on-Wye, which is, for my money, one of the most beautiful parts of these islands. Phil, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. I know you're going to say it's only me, but I am very, very nervous.
It's only me.
I grew up not far from where you live now. I grew up in Felton, and right. I spent a lot of time down in Brentford. And that was my early life until sort of 25, 30. I moved over to Ross-on-Wye. I was in the fire service, and I transferred to this part of the world and worked in Bristol. But I retired about 7 years ago, and since then took on outdoor instruction, doing DOV, working
there's loads of it around there. It's an odd thing to say, but there's lots of canoes in your neck of the woods.
Lots of canoes on the River Wye, yeah. So I can almost see the River Wye from the house.
Oh.
And it's absolutely fantastic. But the main point, it's funny because I'm just doing a wilderness course at the moment, a therapy in the wilderness, and okay. Reading a fantastic book this morning, which, when your topic came up, which is quite nice and lighthearted compared to what we've been talking about over the weeks, but it seems to talk about how our brain, when we're in a city environment, the amount of work it has to do, just focusing on everything that's going on.
Ah.
When we actually come to the countryside, it's time for it to relax and just to repair, as they say. Because you're...
Of course it is.
And it's just like looking into a bonfire.
Yeah.
And you just gaze, and your brain switches off and just, I think, just relaxes and just calms down. But there's a lovely quote in this book of this person, this author, Florence Williams, in The Nature Fix. He's talking about what the countryside does to you. And it's like this. He says, this is what happens when you watch a sunset or the rain. The most restorative landscapes are the ones that hit the sweet spot of being interesting, but not too interesting. They should entice our attention, but not demand it. And it's almost...
Oh, I love that.
I feel that that's when you come from a city environment out to the countryside. There's less to worry about.
Did it kick in immediately, or did you feel, were you a bit itchy at first? I know we're going back a while now, but were you a bit kind of antsy at first?
I always felt relaxed coming out from the city, going walking with friends. I could always feel it straight away, and it does so much, I think, for your mental health. And it's so important to get people out into the countryside.
Go on.
I notice it with the DOV. We get lots of... I work with lots of schools from inner London.
Yeah.
I work for a company based in Hale Wye, who are absolutely fantastic. And most of the schools are from inner London, and they come out to the countryside, and they can't have their phones. They relax, they talk to each other, they start to bond.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the minute that we finish and we give them back their phones, they're back on them. But for those 3-4 days, they've just connected and relaxed,
You're talking about overload. That's such a powerful contribution, because I hadn't thought of that. And you know me, I'm going to be able to tie this back into the first hour of conversation that we had when I quoted F. Scott Fitzgerald, because rich people often talk about, when I first started hanging around with them, they talk about going to the country for the weekend. They don't say, I'm going to Worcestershire or I'm going to Hampshire. They just say, I'm going to the country. And they could go to each other's houses, or they've got country houses. And that's why. Because even if you're, you know, leading a life of immense comfort, if you're in the city, if you have invisible antennae, they're twitching all the time. They're twitching because a car alarm just went off. They're twitching because the bus just went past. They're twitching because there's someone on the other side of the road who looks a bit tasty. They're twitching because, oh, that shop's shut. And the estate agent, and they're angry, and the car, and the road, and the taxi. And then you get to the countryside, and they're not twitching anymore.
Yeah.
That's what she means when she says interesting, but not too interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, like watching the butterfly or watching the sunset.
Yeah.
It just, you don't have to think too much, and you drift off into your own mind, I think. And it's,
So you never look back?
No. And I enjoy the work I'm doing. So we also, at the Outdoor Centre, I work in the Forest of Dean. We get kids from Bristol, from the centre there, and they come out for a week.
What's the change you most often see? Can we pinpoint it? Perhaps I'm being a little bit crass, but if you had to sort of, stick it on a slogan, or stick it on a t-shirt, or stick it on a website. This is what I see happen to so many children that they don't expect to happen. But when they get out of the town into the country, this happens. What happens?
It's hard to pinpoint it. They just seem to calm down.
Yeah.
You know, you get the teachers coming there. They're hyper the first few days, and by the last few days, they're calming down.
That's
restorative. Yeah.
It's going to have space, and your antennae stop twitching. Thank you. That's lovely stuff. Do you want to mention any of the people you work for? I mean, you're entirely welcome to, if people would benefit from knowing more about them, but you don't have to.
The one in the Forest of Dean is the Dean Field Study Centre. Absolutely fantastic. Ian runs it. And the the DV Centre is the A to Z Expeditions. They're great.
There we go. So any teachers listening, get themselves signed up. DV is an amazing thing to do, whatever your background, whatever your location. Thank you, Phil. Some beautiful parts of the country, actually. Do you know Matthew Parris was writing, in The Spectator about Kidderminster this week? Well, certainly recently it popped up on one of the local websites, but not really about the countryside, except insofar as the Severn Valley Railway makes its way through the beautiful Worcestershire countryside. Which reminds me, I went train spotting at the weekend. Did I mention that? More on that in the next hour. Keith, is that the best hook and tease I've ever done? I went train spotting on Saturday. More on that in the next hour. Stay tuned. Jim's in Kirkfield Bank in Lanark. What would you like to say, Jim?
Hi, James. Hello, mate. I just thought I'd list. I grew up in the east end of Glasgow in a high-rise tower.
Gosh.
And 20 years ago, my wife and daughters and I moved to the beautiful Clyde Valley, about 30 miles south of Glasgow. And I know I'm limited in time, so I'm going to list some of the benefits,
and some of
the plus points. My nearest neighbour is 400 yards away one way, and the next one's 2.5 miles the other way. So if I want a bit of a party, I'm all right with the noise. On a clear, dark night, I can see the Aurora, the Milky Way, the Starlink satellite train. I can see the ISS.
Wow.
The four windows in my lounge were about 1,000 feet above sea level. The four windows in my lounge, we've never put curtains up, because to the left, I can see the Isle of Arran. To the right, I can see the Trossachs. And straight ahead, I can see Arica. I can see Ben Lomond and Loch Lomond. There are some downsides. There's obviously some smells that you get. The fresh cut grass, which is nice, but then you've got what goes on to the freshly cut grass.
How have you changed?
I've just become a calmer person. You know, we moved out here to start a dog hotel after we had a bad boarding experience with our own dog.
Okay.
We now work from home. I was a salesman that was driving 50,000 miles a year. I now walk 20 metres to work every day.
But do you think, because you're being very male, you're listing things, I appreciate that, but I want the insides. How do you notice that you've changed?
There's one thing that I'm grateful for,
yes,
every time I look out my window, especially during a cold, frosty, clear winter's day, and I can see Glasgow from my front window,
yeah,
and there's a brown fog that sits above the city, coming from the pollution from the cars and the buses and the taxis. And I just look back and think, me and my family, we've spent 20 years not breathing that stuff. You know?
And you can breathe differently. Not just,
very much
not
so,
just biologically, but also mentally. It's not just the air, if you see what I mean.
One of the other downsides is I'm a 2.5 hour walk to the nearest pub, which I've had to do a couple of times.
It was all going so well, Jim. There it is, 12 noon. And you can tell from the rising noise in the background that we're nearing the end of this hour, although we will be moving on to new territory. The EU has described itself as having, or rather an EU commissioner has described the organisation as having an open mind with regards to possible customs union, with regards to us joining a possible customs union. There is, would you believe, a danger of schools shutting in London because of a drop in pupil numbers. And a woman has been spared jail after explaining that the reason why she assaulted three police officers was because of the menopause.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Liberal Democrats have called for a public inquiry after Lord Mandelson was accused of leaking sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein. Documents appear to show he forwarded emails while he was business secretary under Gordon Brown. Keir Starmer is facing claims of poor judgment for appointing Peter Mandelson as US ambassador in 2024. The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, says the Prime Minister has questions to answer.
What I want to see is justice done. The allegations that we're hearing about misconduct in public office, let's investigate that. The one person who doesn't want to have that investigation is the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, because it's going to leave him exposed. So he's talking about removing peerages rather than looking at getting justice done and exposing the mess he made by appointing this man as our ambassador in the first place.
Peter Mandelson hasn't responded to the latest revelation, but has previously denied any wrongdoing.
A 13-year-old boy has been arrested over a suspected hit-and-run e-bike crash with a pregnant woman. Her baby, who was born after last Monday's crash in Poole, remains in a serious condition. The teenager is being held on suspicion of a driving offence. There have been more Russian airstrikes on Ukraine's capital overnight. The attacks targeted Kyiv's energy infrastructure during freezing temperatures. Officials say more than 1,000 homes have been left without heating. French police have raided the offices of the social media platform X. Prosecutors say they're widening an investigation into algorithms and data to include complaints over the AI chatbot Grok. And charities have welcomed a government promise to pay for the travel costs of families with children who have cancer in England. Ministers say it'll be available to patients aged 24 and under from next year. Sonia Malik is from Young Lives Versus Cancer and says families spend £250 a month on average.
It's really expensive to have cancer. It's really expensive for everything right now. But on top of all of that, children and young people with cancer in their families get hit with this extra bill to travel to treatment, and this will mean so much to all of them.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 42 at £10,299. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, a wet and breezy afternoon for most. Hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Day out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor! Party time! Woohoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 12 is the time. It's a funny one, this, but if we hadn't just done that conversation about the countryside, which I just loved, by the way, and many much more is coming in, but if I hadn't just done that conversation about the countryside, I think I'd have the same conversation now about train spotting. It would be the same thing. It's about the... I mean, I don't think that everybody would benefit from train spotting in the way that everybody would benefit from communing with nature. But the idea of explaining to people who just don't get it what the appeal is somehow one of my favourite subjects. Whatever the subject is, whatever it is that we are describing as being appealing, it is historically one of my all-time favourite subjects. So this hour... I will tell you why I went train spotting on Saturday and what happened and what I discovered about it. My first and possibly my last ever adventure in train spotting, but it was absolutely fascinating. In some ways, the next conversation is also an invitation to you to explain to people who know nothing, about an issue what you know about it, because you know a lot or you know everything. And we have to be on our toes a little bit. We need, you know, I was trying to think what words to use in the question that I'm about to ask you, because I don't know whether or not I'm going to be flirting with low-level misogyny here. Is there a word for what you might call mild sexism? I don't mean casual sexism. It's just male privilege, isn't it? What was I doing the other day? And I was reading something in a class that I'm doing. And one of the women in the class just said, yeah, but that's very different if you're a woman. And I think a few years ago, I'd have sort of questioned that and I'd have gone, why? No, it isn't. And then I read it again and I thought, so it was a film script about, a kind of gunfight. And the woman rescues the man and the man says something to her, which I thought was entirely unremarkable. But the woman in the class pointed out that it was quite condescending. It was almost like he was patting her on the head and saying, well done for saving his life. And I needed a woman to explain that to me before I could see it. And once she'd explained it to me, it was absolutely crystal clear. So I am a man and I am about to talk about the menopause. I'm about to talk about a woman who has been spared jail after blaming the menopause for assaulting three police officers. That is the way that the Times has chosen to report the story. So if you're uncomfortable with the word blaming, which you might be, it is something that I've just read out of the newspaper. There's some other things I'm going to read out of the newspaper, although some of them would need to be bleeped out, so I won't... I've just worked out what one of them is. It's got the words that the Times have been hyphenated. So it's got K hyphen 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 head. And I'm sitting there thinking, what's that then? What's that? But of course it's a silent K. It's a silent K, isn't it? On that, on K hyphen 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 head. And what I mean by, it's not male privilege. Is there a word for it? Like just being a bit daft because you're a bloke. No, the word I'm looking for, Eleanor, is not ignorant. I'm looking for something a bit milder than that, that simply says, because I'm a man, I may approach this topic in a way that is not suitable. I'm struggling for my word today. It's not ignorant. I'm looking for something more nuanced than ignorance. Blasé is not bad, actually. But it would be a specifically masculine blasé-ness. So, like I said to the last fella, I said, you're being a man. Because he was just listing things. And it was lovely. And the list worked. But it was a male approach to the issue. To just list things and to convey via the list the feeling. But it was a male... So there's nothing wrong with saying that's quite a male way of doing things. Obviously, there's no male way of doing the flipping menopause. It is... not something I know nothing about, but it's not something that I want. I don't want to. For example, when I was thinking about what word to use in terms of the impact that it has had upon you, I couldn't think of the right word. You know, what I'm not going to say. Shall I say the words I shouldn't use in this context, or would that be as bad as this is what I mean by being sensitive? Is that if I now say, you know, did the menopause drive you hyphen 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 hyphen, 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 then it would be possibly a conversation being conducted in a way that a woman wouldn't conduct it. But then I sort of think about women sitting around together discussing the menopause, and they'd be incredibly, you would be incredibly raucous and irreverent, wouldn't you? I think, in some contexts. So, but anyway, possibly I'm beating myself up unduly. What I'm doing is getting my apology in first before I commit any offences. That's probably not a bad way to operate. So you can't have a go at me now because I've already said sorry. All right? And obviously, if I end up saying something that's a bit crass or offensive or insensitive, it is because of all the reasons that I've just tried but largely failed to list and explain. So I'm now immune from all criticism and demands for apology. An award-winning dog groomer, and I think the point there is it wouldn't have made the news had she not just had a bit of a win at Crufts last year. Best puppy. Couldn't make it up, could you? Best puppy at Crufts. An award-winning dog groomer has been spared jail after blaming the menopause for assaulting three police officers. And again, if we were to be indulging in lazy tabloid sensibilities, we'd probably be like, oh, well, nice work if you can get it. Oh, shame I can't claim it's the menopause. Oh, well, it's the reason why I lamped three police officers who came around my house. But that's what I don't want to do. But neither do I want to treat it disrespectfully. And the phrase that is used in the story, which is a better phrase than any of the ones that I managed to come up with, is emotional difficulties. So the police were called to her home for reasons that are undisclosed, but which did not lead to any further action. And they attempted to take her to the police station. She asked whether or not she could change out of her pajamas. They said no. And to use a technical term, it really kicked off. She wanted to, she was wearing her pyjamas, and she wanted to, in her own words, protect her modesty before she went to the police station. The police officers refused, so she kicked off. She struck out at the officers. While being arrested for assaulting them, she said, I hope it effing hurt, K hyphen 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 head. She later blamed her behaviour on emotional difficulties brought on by the menopause. And then in a beautiful non sequitur, the Times reports in the very next paragraph, last year, Byrne won best puppy with her poodle Simba at the Crufts International Dog Show. In fact, let's do those next to each other. If you were doing this on the 10 o'clock news, would you be able to keep a straight face? When this was refused, the mother of two struck out at the officers. While being arrested for assaulting police, she said, I hope it effing hurt. head, the court heard. She later blamed her behaviour on emotional difficulties brought on by the menopause. Last year, Byrne won Best Puppy with her poodle Simba at the Crufts International Dog Show. And what other information are you going to stick in the middle of a story like this? Last year, she won a Best Puppy. She was facing 16 weeks in jail under sentencing guidelines. She pleaded guilty. She admitted the charges, reached magistrates court, and they let her go. They discharged her. She was not jailed, and the court accepted her explanation and the fact that she was seeking NHS and private support for mental health issues. But crucially, it was the emotional difficulties brought on by the menopause that constituted the thrust and the crux of her defence. She kicked out, she elbowed a police officer, she kicked another police officer, she shouted at them, as we know, and the menopause is the rationale and reason given for the, quotes, emotional difficulties, end quotes. So, women under a certain age, and all men listening to this, will know nothing about what has just been described. The difference between the men who know nothing about it and the women who know nothing about it is that the women will one day. It is not ignorance that I am seeking to articulate. It is the male perspective on an issue that we might be minded to speak about a little bit disrespectfully through, almost through discomfort or, you know, thinking that this is female territory. But the crucial point is an absolute failure to properly understand what a severe condition the menopause can be. There are three things going on here, and I have discovered them only as a consequence of presenting phone-ins about this issue before. The first is, it is an entirely lottery-based condition. Two women who are outwardly identical can have incredibly different experiences with the menopause. That is point one. Point two, which is possibly a consequence of point one, is that it is not taken seriously enough by the medical establishment. Things are much better than they used to be, but they are nowhere near as good as they would be if it was men who had the menopause. And that is part of the issue as well, because, you know, you think about hot flushes or you think about the change, you think about some of the sort of cliches of menopause conversation. What you don't think about is emotional turmoil. You don't think about epic impacts so profound that they could lead an otherwise law-abiding and peaceable citizen to attack police officers who've turned up at her house. So point one is, just because yours was quite mild doesn't mean this woman isn't telling the truth, because loads and loads of people report having symptoms of the menopause that are violent. Whether they lead to violence or whether they are simply violent in their scale is something that you will tell me in a minute. Point two is that the medical establishment doesn't fully appreciate this and can be quite dismissive, as it often is of women's issues in general, but as is particularly true in the context of the menopause. And then point three is, of course, that it does constitute a proper defence, because if you are being temporarily maddened, say that's a good example. Is that the wrong word to use in this context? You're being temporarily maddened? Your rage has become uncontrollable as a consequence of the menopause. Then it is only right that it would be taken into account by magistrates who are considering sentencing. So 16 minutes after 12 is the time. How bad was yours? Or how bad is yours? So in the last hour, you'll remember I was at great pains to stress that we were conducting a conversation directed at people who were frightened of cows or frightened of eggs. This is a conversation directed at people who either don't believe this story or don't believe that things can be that bad. I do believe that they can be that bad. I think that the magistrates almost certainly got it right. But I know that menopause is not a word that necessarily conjures up in the minds of people rationale for or explanation of assaulting three police officers. So just tell me what happened to you. Put into words, if you can, how violent an impact it had upon you. Up to and including you becoming violent. Okay? 0345 60 60973. And just to highlight perhaps the difference between men and women, once again, I don't know the gender of the police officers who conducted this arrest. The fact that she called one of them a K-head suggests certainly that he was male. But an awful lot of you are listening to this and picking up immediately upon the fact that she wasn't allowed to protect her modesty. She wasn't allowed to put on a bra or a jumper. They were trying to take her in her pyjamas. The problem there is that we don't know the details of the alleged domestic incident to which they were responding, although no further action has been taken. So that's a fairly unpleasant element of the story that I don't think we can examine any further, because she's not claiming that it was the unfairness of them not letting her put a jumper on that prompted the violence. It was the emotional difficulties brought on by the menopause. Tell me why you believe her. 0345 60 60 973. In fact, further, tell me why you know she's telling the truth, because of what you've been through. And that way, I think, is the best way to get into this particular issue. If I read a text to you that says, "You are so gullible. Lawyers are paid fortunes to get people off charges." How much money would you bet that that was from a man? Probably a divorced man, John. How much money would you... And that is, in some ways, the point that I'm making. Tell me why you know she's telling the truth. Tell John why he's the one who's gullible, because he would rather believe the cynical lie than the sympathetic truth. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
The only show to see in London is turning the theatre world upside down. Stranger Things, The First Shadow.
The First Shadow is the Stranger Things play.
It's the origin of the upside down.
It's probably the biggest, most technical design the audience will ever experience.
Stranger Things, The First Shadow. Book your tickets now at StrangerThingsOnStage.com.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail. But a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Kart, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The fun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. They're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's rage. We're talking about menopausal rage. I don't know why I was tying myself in knots worrying about what words to use. And I don't think it's something that enough of us know enough about. But you know everything about it because you have it or have had it. So just talk to me about it. About menopausal rage and the realisation. Perhaps there'll be people listening to this who didn't even realise that the reason why they suddenly became raging in their early 50s or their late 40s or whenever it may have been was actually the menopause. Because you go to the doctor. You have told me this in the past. I presume it's still true. You go to the doctor and the doctor doesn't take it seriously enough. So rage as a symptom of menopause, your stories. Why didn't I just say that? It's 21 minutes after 12. If I came on, you'd think I'd been taken ill, wouldn't you? If I came on at 3 minutes past 12 and said, right, we're talking about rage as a symptom of menopause, 0345 6060 973, your stories, please. Lise is in Saltney Ferry. Lise, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, I could talk to you all day about menopause. Um, I
the rage that I experienced when I was going through the height of my, they say you never really stop going through it, but at the height of it, the rage I experienced was the most intense anger that I have ever experienced in my life. And the sad part about it, James, is the fact that I felt entitled to that anger. Ooh. There was an entitlement to that anger that just made me feel like I could do whatever I want because I'm entitled to be angry right now. And it's just a deep-seated in the pit of your stomach. And along with that, you get the depression because then you start feeling guilty about how angry you got at somebody or whatever. And depression to the point where I've never, because I've fluctuated with depression on and off my whole life.
Sure.
But this was, I don't even know the words to describe to you what that felt like inside. I remember walking along one time and I looked down and I saw a bracelet on the ground. It was a little Swarovski crystal bracelet. And I bent down and I picked it up and I started crying because somebody lost their bracelet and I felt so sorry for that person that lost their bracelet. And my friends laugh about it now. And in fact, one of my friends uses it at work as a description of how bad things can get. The thing about it is you can't tell somebody this is how angry I feel because
why not?
Well, the worry is that somebody isn't either going to not understand. Even women will sometimes say to other women, I went through menopause and it didn't affect me.
I'm fascinated by these people. They're the ones who've never had a cold and therefore thinks that the common cold doesn't exist. I've never sneezed. Anyone who's sneezing is faking it. It's a false behavior. Talk to me more, because that's about the reaction that you get from within your circle of knowledge, but also from the medical establishment. Just tell me a bit more about the rage, if you can. So would you? I mean, I don't want to tempt you into territory you're not comfortable in, but would you become violent?
No, I mean, I don't tend to be a violent person anyway,
I don't think that this dog groomer is a violent person anyway, but it's a consequence of the emotional difficulties brought on by the menopause that saw her lamping three police officers on a Saturday night.
Yeah, I say that I haven't gotten violent, but I can't tell you how many items of mine that I shouldn't say this, my friends might be listening, things that I have torn up.
It's all right, you've got a very unrecognizable voice. No one will know it's you.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But yeah, I've tearing things up in my house, wrecking things. Maybe if somebody upset me, I might, like one time I took this little Furby that my mom had given me, and she had upset me, and so I just tore that thing up and then felt so guilty afterwards. So that violence. And then I think one of the things that really made me think I need to get help was that I got a puppy and I kept thinking to myself, I got to take care of this puppy. I can't kill myself. I can't be depressed all the time. I can't be angry. Cause I was finding myself getting angry at this little puppy for things like, he ate my food
one night. Just being a puppy. Yeah. Just doing a puppy thing. But puppy, I mean, it's interesting that puppies pop up in both of these stories. There's the lady who won a rose. You've never taken your puppy to Crufts, I don't believe, Lise.
No.
well, Jackie, I haven't said her name, I don't think. But anyway, so the puppy was the reason how you realized that your rage was not normal.
Yeah.
So what help did you get, briefly, if you would?
Okay. I did go to my GP surgery, crying my eyes out. They didn't seem to be interested, so I went to A&E. The lady at A&E, I was literally bawling my eyes out, and I had put blister packs of my citalopram, like a bunch of them, in my purse. And I had decided when I went to A&E that if they didn't
I'm going to stop you there because there's some things that we can't really say on the radio except to remind people that that anybody facing the kind of issues you're describing can access the support of the Samaritans 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I understand what you were about to say because I'm borderline psychic, but don't go there.
Okay,
worries. Thank you.
No worries. But the lady in A&E was brilliant. She saw me bawling my eyes out.
I love your accent so much. Where did you grow up?
Kentucky.
Ball in my eyes. Yeah. Go on.
One of the ding-a-ling states.
Isn't it just?
She come around the thing, and she took me by the shoulders and took me to where I needed to be. I finally got help. I got hormones and citalopram. I found things like diet, exercise, things like that do kind of help, walking the puppy, you know, laughing.
But you've also got to accept that this is happening to you. Hopefully it will pass, but the rage is real and present and constant. And thank you. Gosh, I had to stop myself. I had to stop you talking then because I could listen to that accent all day long. I really could. It's just glorious. I say, where did you grow up? If she'd said Bristol, I'd have screamed. Fleur is in Southwold in Suffolk. Fleur, what made you pick up the phone?
I just wanted to highlight that there's no support out there. So when you have, I had a hysterectomy, so it plunged me into menopause at age 49, which is very early.
Right.
I think I turned the anger onto myself, which is a very female thing to do. At one point nearly cut off all my hair, couldn't cope.
Why? Just pause there if you would, if it's okay. Just out of frustration. Why would you cut off?
I didn't do it, but I had some scissors in my room and I was like, oh my God, I was recovering. I wasn't myself at all. I had a private surgeon, very eminent, sit there and tell me, not every woman needs HRT. Looked to me as if I was some idiot.
Yeah, I'm getting that a lot in my inbox.
And, luckily I've got the money to go and pay to go and see somebody private. Well, I don't have the money, but you understand. You can find it.
You found it.
But not everybody can do that. And it's disgusting. You just get left adrift. As if you're
and I suppose
idiot.
In some ways, well, can I just say, and I know you already know this, but you've used the word two or three times now, you're not an idiot.
Okay, yeah.
Right? You're not now, and you never have been an idiot. This is the program that we've got Idiot's Corner. I know all about idiots. You're not even close to being an idiot. In fact, there's quite a lot of idiots. I don't even need to check whether it's coming in from a man or a woman, but there are quite a lot of idiots applying for immediate entry into Idiot's Corner, and you're not even close. But it hadn't occurred to me that it might be worse if your rage is directed at yourself, in the context of your own mental health, it might be worse because you're
self-sabotage.
Yes, exactly.
I have the most supportive husband in the world, and you know he was driving me insane just because he was swallowing or he was breathing loudly.
Bless him!
Just my God.
What else did he do that was driving you? Let's make a list for Malcolm.
About on his chair in an annoying
way. Stop moving! Stop bloody breathing! Please!
Yeah, it was. Yes. It was the stop breathing. I had to become my own expert. I had to, and I knew that this eminent surgeon, after I'm post 8 weeks, post my operation, I'd done all the information. I'd done it all. I knew exactly what I needed, but I still had that white coat. Oh,
he must know what he's talking about. There must be something wrong. I must be missing something.
And I just kind of sucked it up. And then I went straight to my GP, who was amazing, and put me on HRT immediately. Then I went privately to go and get testosterone and other supplements and that kind of business.
And it's worked?
I wouldn't say so, but I go between up and down now. So,
it's there. I mean, this is from a man, and this is nice. I would call him, but I'm afraid my wife would hear. Seriously, she's normally the most patient and unassuming person, and she's become very different, and I, as her partner, can do nothing but support her through what is clearly a very difficult stage in her life. If this was a male issue, we would not be ignoring it.
Absolutely. That was the rage for me, was that nobody understood. I'm trying to explain to my husband. He didn't understand. He's like, God, you've had 3 months off work now. What's the problem?
Wow.
I'm like, no. And then he realised, because he watched all sorts of little YouTube things, and I showed him all of the information, and then he could cope with it.
And knowledge is power. Yeah, knowledge is power.
But I'm educated. You know, I can go and find. I can sift through research. I can do all of that. Yeah. You know, and I can weed out the nearly swore. Weed out the chaff from
And you're right, not everybody can, and that's why you need to rely. Some people would be even more reliant upon the fella in the white coat, and the more reliant on them you are if they're not up to the job, or they're not properly understanding or sympathetic, then the more trouble you're going to end up in. Thank you, Flo. That was lovely. Or rather helpful and insightful, and a little bit lovely in the middle when everybody suddenly found themselves feeling sorry for your husband. But only very briefly, because it is the woman who is going through hell. It is 12:32, and I want more on the issue of rage, menopausal rage, and how we... I mean, it's obviously true, but how bad does it get? Why are you absolutely certain that the award-winning dog groomer who has been spared jail after blaming the menopause for assaulting three police officers was indeed a victim of menopausal rage? And you know, because you've been there. Unlike all the men dropping me text expressing scepticism, cynicism, or attempts at comedy. Matt Hewitt has your headlines.
In the last few minutes, the data protection watchdogs announced a formal investigation into Grok. Elon Musk's AI chatbot will be examined by the Information Commissioner's Office after it generated sexual imagery of people without their consent. The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, accused Sir Keir Starmer of talking about removing Peter Mandelson from the House of Lords rather than looking at getting justice done. Downing Street says it's assisting police who are investigating allegations that while he was business secretary, he leaked sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein. And we're just hearing a light aircraft has crashed in Greater Manchester. Emergency services are responding to reports of a crash in the Littleborough area. LBC weather, a wet and breezy afternoon for most. Hill snow for parts of Wales, eastern Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment you relax, knowing that Barclays Advanced Tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Ooh. Just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you. Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories, and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a beekeeper, for support with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
12:36 is the time. More on this phenomenon, if you like, of menopausal rage and the attendant issues or points that it raises shortly. But just a quick one. That can't be a coincidence, can it? The fact that the French authorities and the English or the British Commissioner's Office, the Information Commissioner's Office, have both moved on X at the same time. Raids, I think, in France and reports now in the UK that an investigation, particularly into Grok, their sort of AI bot. I don't know what the correct lingo is on this, and I will fix that, I promise you. But the, the French authorities are describing an investigation into alleged cyber crime. The UK Information Commissioner's Office is looking at its potential, the AI system's potential to produce harmful sexualized image and video content, which constitutes, of course, alleged cybercrime as well. So I'm going to say this again because it's really important, okay? And also because there are people in this country and in my profession who either still don't get it or are pretending not to get it for reasons or don't care for even more hideous reasons. This is why they are pretending that we have freedom of speech problems in this country, because they are terrified that we will actually start protecting ourselves and our children from the hideous potential and actuality of what happens on these platforms. And that will cost them money. That is why they are doing it. Why is J.D. Vance lying about free speech in the UK? Why is Elon Musk lying about free speech in the UK? Why is Nigel Farage lying about free speech in the UK? Because they know that the authorities have finally developed an appetite to protect our children from technology that lets every pervert on the planet virtually undress them, something that Elon Musk finds hilarious. That's why it's happening. I mean, they tie themselves in hypocritical knots in the process, of course. Farage complaining to the police about jokes while claiming that you should be able to incite murderous violence against refugees without being in any way cautioned by the authorities at all. So they will tie themselves in knots, but that doesn't matter in a universe of hypocrisy. They are lying about your freedom of speech being under threat, unless you are a massive racist and you want to incite murderous violence against refugees, of course, in which case your, quotes, freedom of speech, end quotes, is under threat, thank God, because if they come for the refugees today, they might be coming for you tomorrow. But unless you are a massive racist, then you have to resist these lies, because they are designed to protect us and to protect our children from, if you're French this morning, alleged cybercrime. If you're British, from the AI system that Musk is popularizing and its potential to produce harmful sexualized image and video content. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Okay? It is technology that allows every pervert on the planet to undress your children. And Elon Musk thinks it's funny. And Nigel Farage thinks it's a threat to freedom of speech. Of course he doesn't, but that's what he'll say. So bear that in mind. As we return our attention to the altogether different question of menopause being a reason why you find it very easy to believe that a woman has assaulted three police officers, because although the rest of us will read this and go, what? You will hear this story and go, oh, why? Jenny's in St. Albans. Jenny, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello.
I want to tell you about an incident where I really nearly did something terrible in a state of rage, which I feel was to do with the menopause. But I want to contextualise it first.
Of course.
So I passed my driving test in 1994, and I've only ever had 3 points on my licence once,
okay,
which was when I got snapped by a camera. I went to pick up something I bought, bought it from somebody on eBay or something. So I was driving in town centre where there was a camera, 30-mile zone, you know,
sure.
So I'm
yeah,
a really
yeah, yeah.
safe driver.
I understand.
The other thing is I drive quite a small car because I have to park on a postage stamp in front of a town
Listen, my tongue is very firmly in my cheek, Jenny, but we don't do motoring phone-ins.
I'm joking,
but I'm just conscious of the time.
A terrible thing when I was in my car,
right,
which is why I'm contextualising
yes,
it like this.
Of course.
So I had a commute to work where there were roadworks, and there was also a private school with lots of four-wheel drives. So it was a bit of a nightmare commute to work that I was having at the time. I was tailgated by a bloke in a Mercedes quite a lot of the way, and I drive this small, low-status car, as I think I made clear. And there's a bit where I was coming into the town where I was working, and the high street, you come into the high street, you have to come around a roundabout, and it was quite slow. And as I was coming out of the roundabout, and I was late, by the way, so I was a little bit late for work.
Yeah.
These two young guys, who looked like the kind of guys that would drive a white van.
Okay. That's a bit snobby, but we'll let that pass.
I know, carry on. It is, but I'll talk about men in white vans as well in a minute. But
you won't. Carry on.
They turned around and looked at me, and they wanted to cross the road, and there was no pedestrian crossing or anything. But I would say that the taller one that was leading just gave me this look of complete and utter contempt and just stepped into the road in this sort of very entitled, I'm going to walk in front of you, even though, you know, I don't have the right of way here. And I nearly put my foot down and ran him over. I was shaking when I got to work. Because
but you were horrified
so
by what you'd felt.
And mowing him down, yeah.
And why, I mean, again, more context, although less motoring. Why do you know that was the menopause? Because it was so out of character.
Completely out of character. I've never done anything violent towards anyone apart from fights to my little brother when I was growing up.
They don't count.
I've never hit anyone as an adult. You know, I'm not even somebody who has a hot temper.
But there was just this uncontrollable. Well, it was controllable. It was controllable.
Kind of red mist. Yeah.
Wow.
But there's another reason for that, which, you know, is what I mentioned to your researcher when I rang in, which I think feeds into this. Because very definitely the menopause makes you more emotionally dysregulated. It makes it harder to control your emotions. And, you know, sudden flashes of anger are an element of that. But I think another thing that I realized when I got to a certain age is that as a woman, you get to a certain age and you become invisible. Right. And there are kind of good and bad aspects of that. I realized when I got to about 45 that I would walk down the street and men wouldn't look at me in an admiring way anymore. I was invisible. And I can't say I had much regret about that. It was actually quite liberating in a way to be more invisible. But it made me angry thinking back of all the decades when, you know, I had to kind of adjust my behavior not to offend somebody, like some chap who would start speaking to me. I wasn't interested in having a conversation, didn't really want to engage, but didn't want to upset him because as a woman, you're always afraid of a man reacting in a negative way if you convey any kind of rejection. But I think it's more than that. I think when you become a middle-aged woman and you become invisible and you lose your sexual value and you're not considered attractive, in inverted commas, anymore, men treat you in a different way. And it's not until it happens that you realize there's so much of what you took as common courtesy from men for years wasn't courtesy at all. It was just them treating you politely because they thought that you were attractive. And when you become unattractive, when you become an invisible middle-aged woman, men let doors drop on you, they push past you. Men in white vans behave incredibly disrespectfully.
Well,
incredibly disrespectfully towards women in small, low-status cars who are middle-aged.
No, fair enough. I don't know why I'm correcting you. This is your experience. I'm here to say hashtag not all men in white vans, but that's not really...
Yeah, not all men in white vans. Lots of men in white vans have a lot of entitlement
and lots of men in Mercedes
in
as well,
and I think that what happens is that you start noticing misogyny and you see it, and when you start seeing it you can't unsee it, and you realize how pervasive it is and how it's absolutely everywhere. And I want to just comment on something that Fleur mentioned, actually, because she was talking about how she'd had some good medical treatment and she mentioned getting testosterone from a private clinic. Now I think that there's a lot of misogyny in the medical establishment, and for example, you know, as a doctor in training, I didn't like having male trainers, for example, because they would often know very little about women's health and very little about female hormones and HRT, you know, often sort of stuck in the dark ages. Some of it is just because women prefer to go to female doctors, so they don't have as much experience.
Yes.
But I've got a friend who was having a terrible time with menopausal symptoms, and she ended up going privately and getting testosterone, which is mostly associated as a male hormone. But women still produce testosterone, and lower levels of testosterone can contribute massively to menopausal symptoms in women. So testosterone supplementation can make a big difference
again, if this
to well-being.
If this were a condition, if we were discussing this from the other side of the gender divide, the research would have been done and the knowledge would be commonplace, I think. Such is the nature. Have you read Caroline Criado Perez's book?
I have, I read that when it first came out. I've got a hardback copy and I gave it to my daughters to read as well. But I must tell you, do you know what the indication is for women being able to access testosterone for the menopause on the NHS?
No, I don't.
Okay, it's one, you have to say the magic words to be able to access testosterone. So you can have terrible menopausal symptoms which are ruining your life, and testosterone is the thing that will make the difference. But to be able to get it on the NHS, you need to say that you've got a loss of libido.
Oh. And then
so if you have a loss of libido, then you'll be prescribed it. So when your menopause affects a man, you can get testosterone.
God.
I rest my case.
Well, rest away. Thank you for that. That's a bit of a moment, isn't it, for a lot of people listening. And for me, I didn't know that. I mean, it says it all, doesn't it, about the patriarchy, which is a word that sometimes people fail to understand the importance of, but there it is. So the only time that you'll get taken seriously in the medical establishment, and there may well be exceptions to this, I'm sure there are, but the general experience will be, oh, okay then, if you're not feeling sexy anymore, then that is a problem. Feeling rage, feeling anger, feeling depression, well, come on, you'll pull through. But you're not going to be having sex with your partner? Oh dear, well, we better find some medicine. Good Lord. 12:48.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Treacherous and possibly criminal. The police and parliament ramp up pressure on Peter Mandelson, but to what end? The Clintons will face Congress. Will Andrew Windsor? And what about the victims?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Daniel liked how easy it was to transfer his old pensions to PensionBee.
I've had quite an eclectic career, and with that, I'd amassed pensions from a couple of different providers. I signed up using the app. It was really straightforward. I was able to give them a couple of key facts about each of my pensions, and then PensionBee did the rest of the work for me.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
Top 51 is the time. I'm going to run out of time before I've told you my train spotting story, aren't I? And that's probably all you tuned in for today. I hope James talks about how he went train spotting on Saturday. Well, let's see whether or not James Ball, the political editor of The New World, can bring in his explanation of what's going on with regards to Grok and Twitter and Elon Musk in both Britain and France, and leave us with enough time to share our fascinating, indeed some would say, riveted, some very clever people have described my train spotting anecdote as riveting. But James Ball is here. I think last time you joined us, I revealed that there are a few noises more welcome in my home than the sound of the New World fluttering through the letterbox once a week. And this week is no different. But here's some breaking news you'll be aware of. The French and the British have targeted X, for alleged cybercrime, chiefly the capability of its AI arm, known as Grok, to produce harmful sexualized image and video content. What's going on, James?
Well, I think there's a real difference of approach between France and the UK, and people might want to decide which they think is the most intimidating to the world's richest man. France has raided the offices of X in Paris. This follows them having actually a year ago arrested a major social media founder, Telegram, which is often used by far-right and underground groups. Its founder, Pavel Durov, got arrested when he was travelling through the country last year. Today, in connection to a year-long investigation into X, which now includes the sexualized contact allegations on Grok, they've raided the offices.
So have kicked the doors in?
Yeah, they seem to have kicked the doors in, got in with a warrant, they're collecting documents. We don't know the full details of that yet. As far as I can tell, it's actually ongoing. But that's quite dynamic, quite kinetic. And then you've got the UK. And in the UK, we've had the Information Commissioner's Office and Ofcom have both issued statements today. The Information Commissioner, who looks after data protection, has said they're going to open an investigation into Grok's generation of images of mostly of women and girls that are abusive. There have been reports that this was happening at a rate of 8,000 abusive images an hour. I mean, this is a huge thing. But the Information Commissioner's Office looks after data protection, whereas Ofcom regulates internet safety, and they're both separately looking into this. But Ofcom's put out a statement saying it is investigating X, but it's not investigating XAI, which is Grok itself, which is very confusing and very technical. Right. But they're saying that despite all of these internet safety laws that we seem to have passed again and again, they don't actually have the power to investigate the chatbot unless it's on a social network. And the police seem to not be investigating, even though it is a criminal offence to generate images that show sort of children being sexualized, especially when it's real children.
Yes.
And the police seem to be saying, no, it's Ofcom. Ofcom seem to be saying we can only look at it here. So the good news is there are investigations. There's now the ICO and Ofcom. It doesn't sound quite as dramatic as France, though, does it?
No, but they're also chasing different things. I mean, obviously France includes the child abuse images and the sexually explicit deep fakes, but they're also, as you touched on with regard to Eric Botterell, the MP, they're also looking at the algorithm, specifically at the algorithm, and what it puts in front of people. So that's not just manipulation of images and undressing children.
Yes, France has been looking into this for a year. And of course, this is where you start getting into some free speech concerns because, you know, these platforms do sort of have a bit of a duty. Most of us think show a range of views. People want to be able to express themselves online. And finding where that crosses the line into radicalization is quite difficult. But when they are owned by someone who is clearly extremely radical, Elon Musk offered to pay Tommy Robinson's legal bills, for example.
That can't be right, because Elon Musk was asking to go to Jeffrey Epstein's parties after Jeffrey Epstein had been convicted of soliciting a minor for prostitution. And Tommy Robinson wants to protect our girls, James. He's got it on a T-shirt.
It almost seems like they're a bit confused about where they stand on this.
Or massive hypocrites.
Yes, because, of course, Elon Musk a year ago said when he fell out with Donald Trump, said Trump's in the Epstein files. That's not how he that's why he's not releasing them. Seems to have forgotten to mention that he was in there himself as well, doesn't he?
Begging to go to parties. I don't really like this phrase, but there's a reason why it's a cliche. Is it too big to fall? I mean, is Musk so rich and Twitter so big, X as it's called at the moment, that none of this will matter? Almost as if we've flirted with this question a few times. That these new tech behemoths are bigger than nation states.
They're not. It's right. Musk looks huge, but it's largely that no one dares take him on. He's very hard to take on when Donald Trump is in his corner and will back him. But that's because that's the biggest government in the world. Rich men have thought they were bigger than governments before, and it never really ends very well for them. You know, Rockefeller thought this, the Trust Busters thought this. If governments act, if they coordinate, if they take it on, they can do it. And X is about the sixth biggest social network. Mm. YouTube's bigger, TikTok's bigger, Facebook's bigger, Insta's bigger. Lots of people still use it. I moved to Blue Sky. It's much nicer there.
It is. It's getting better as well. It seems to be sort of moving into some of those comedy areas and nice little witticisms that we used to enjoy so much on Twitter. But
yeah, it was too political for a while. But there's actually jokes on Blue Sky finally, which it really needed.
Quite
but
good ones.
X, if it disappeared, you know, your racist uncle might have a few less talking points at Christmas dinner. I don't think we'd miss much else, really.
I think you're probably right. James Ball, many thanks. If you don't already read The New World, or The New European, as it was once known, then you should be. James is the political editor there. And I've not got time for my train spotting story, really. I mean, I could give you the short version, but I'd feel that I wouldn't be doing fair. All right then. So there's this train, right? And I went out on Saturday and I spotted it. No, that's not the story. I went to the West Ealing to Greenford branch line, if you're not familiar with these things, currently boasts the world record holding train that's done the furthest distance on a single battery charge. So it is the future. This is what the future will look like. And I went down on Saturday because it opened. I'd be one of the first people to travel on it. And I have to tell you that the happiness, the infectious joy of your actual train spotter, there's sort of loads of them there, running up and down the platform, jumping on and off the train. It's a repurposed District Line 230. It even has toilets on it. On the West Ealing to Greenford branch line, the best performance ever by a train on a single battery charge. And I loved it. And I didn't just like seeing the train, which was a slightly weird thing for me to do on a Saturday afternoon. But, you know, I would call it, you know what I'd call it, Shee? I'd call it emotional osmosis.
I get that.
The joy of the mostly lads and you know, some in groups, some very much on their own. But the quiet joy of the solitary ones and the shared joy of the ones in groups was impossible to be unmoved by. So I came away probably more delighted by the train spotters than I was by the train.
Does that make you a train spotter?
Indeed, it makes me a lesser spotted train spotter.
That's a lovely expression, by the way, emotional osmosis. Did you come up with that?
Just now.
Yeah. Well done.
Well, thank you very much.
I like that.
If you want to rewind and check it, you can, because if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. Oh, and we've forgotten to play out Jonathan Pryce. We haven't played out Jonathan Pryce yet from Full Disclosure. Gets a mention in the Times today, but guess who doesn't get a mention? Yeah, little old me. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Sawbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Slightly obsessed now about emotional osmosis. It might explain menopausal rage.
It might do, actually, yes. It does empathetic rage.
I was listening
rage
to that hour with great interest. Yes. Yeah. It's a definite phenomenon.
Definitely.
Now, thank you, James. Have a great afternoon. 3 o'clock, possible progress on student loan pressures. I'll have the details at 3. At 2, what would justice for Epstein's victims look like? They can't be lost in all of this. First, though, when you and I were working out how the 2008 financial crisis was going to affect us or businesses, Peter Mandelson was using his role as business secretary to furnish Jeffrey Epstein and friends with confidential information on government and EU policy. Misconduct in public office? Probably. Treachery? Most certainly. Let's talk about that and him and what should happen next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Downing Street says it'll assist police who are looking into allegations the former UK ambassador to the US leaked government secrets to Jeffrey Epstein in 2009. Lord Mandelson was business secretary when he's accused of leaking sensitive information to the convicted paedophile. The peer has previously denied wrongdoing. The Prime Minister wants him to leave the House of Lords. Labour's Dame Emily Thornberry doesn't think that's enough.
This is so deliberate and so treacherous. I'm of the view that the whole House of Lords thing is a little bit of a sideshow and that the behaviour is so bad that it's something that the police should be investigating.
The Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Edward, has told a summit in Dubai that it's important always to remember the Epstein victims. In the last hour, officials have announced they're starting a formal investigation into X's AI chatbot, Grok. The Information Commissioner's Office is going to look at whether it broke the law over creating sexualized deepfakes without consent. The data protection watchdog says concerns were raised about whether there were safeguards in place. This morning, French prosecutors raided the offices of X as they investigate alleged offences, including spreading child sexual abuse images and Holocaust denial. X has said previously it has measures to address concerns. A light aircraft has crashed in Greater Manchester. It came down in a rural area near Littleborough, just outside Rochdale. Emergency services are at the scene. A 13-year-old boy has been arrested in connection with a hit-and-run e-bike crash in Dorset. A pregnant woman was hit last Monday. Her baby was born afterwards and is in a serious condition. Benji Hire is LBC's South of England reporter.
The electric bike rider from Poole has been arrested on suspicion of a driving offence. He'd reportedly fled the scene having collided with a pedestrian, a pregnant woman in her 30s. She attended hospital for treatment. Her baby, who's since been born, remains in hospital in a serious condition.
And the singer Kate Nash has told MPs companies such as Spotify have been very destructive to musicians' lives, creaming off profits while artists take all the risk. She was giving evidence on how post-Brexit rules are making it harder for her to tour in the EU. Spotify's previously said it pays out two-thirds of every dollar it generates from music back to the rights holders. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 48 points at 10,293. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, a wet and breezy afternoon for most. Hill snow for parts of Wales, eastern Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandanger-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, OK. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I'm going to continue to talk for the first part of the programme anyway about the Epstein files and the upshot of them for two particular people in our country, Prince Andrew, as was, and Lord Mandelson, soon to be perhaps plain old Peter Mandelson again, we shall see. I'm going to focus on the victims of the abuse that clearly took place in and around Jeffrey Epstein circles. At 2 o'clock, we'll focus more on that, although there has been a development on that front in terms of public commentary. But I'll begin by talking about Peter Mandelson's position. They're two very different aspects of the same story, really. Really different. You know, one is about people who've been really materially hurt by these events, and another is about somebody who's experiencing quite the fall from grace, which we'll get to in just a second. Natasha Clark joins me, LBC's political editor. On the question of the victims, there's been a fairly sizable comment. Well, a significant person has said something about the victims.
Yes, Sheila. So obviously we've had these accusations about a potential second woman that's come forward that is alleged to have had involvement with the then Prince Andrew. And according to the lawyer who obviously worked as well with Virginia Dufresne, one of Prince Andrew's alleged victims. And we haven't had any comment from Buckingham Palace on the latest tranche of the Epstein files, which was released by the US Department for Justice last week. We've also not had any comments on those reports, which were first reported by the Times newspaper over the weekend. Buckingham Palace haven't given any form of statement, but today we have heard at a summit in Dubai, Prince Edward, the brother of Charles Mountbatten Windsor, has told CNN, "It's all really important always to remember the victims." And you'll remember, Sheila, that obviously that statement where Prince Andrew was essentially cut loose by the king last year, it was the first mention in a Buckingham Palace statement of the victims of Epstein's crimes. And it was seen at the time as quite a step forward. Indeed, a friend of the king and queen had told the Times at the time that Andrew allegedly signed off on the removal of references to victims in communications which were drafted as attempts to try and distance himself from Jeffrey Epstein over the years. The person that was quoted at the time said, "There has long been a sense from the family that the voices of the victims needed to be heard because they feature so heavily in this saga." So those words from Prince Edward that we've just seen in the last few minutes come in, really pointed, actually, and they obviously, you know, go as far as to say that more needs to be done to think about those victims. And obviously it has been at the forefront of lots of government statements, particularly about Jeffrey Epstein, especially from Lord Mandelson, who we've heard time and time again, especially that BBC interview that he did with Laura Koonsberg a few months ago, where he repeatedly said, referenced the victims, but he didn't say sorry. He didn't sort of apologise at first and got into a lot more hot water then for refusing to do so. So those comments, very, very pointed from Prince Edward today. I'm sure they, you know, will echo the sentiment of what many people at Buckingham Palace think. It is very interesting that they haven't really decided to put out any further statements on this. And obviously, it is putting much more pressure on the government as well to act.
But, I mean, the most famous example of the coded language of royal statements was "Recollections May Vary," wasn't it? The Queen's statement on Harry and Meghan. but we saw in the Charles and Camilla joint statement after then Prince Andrew, was losing all his titles, they included a comment about victims, didn't they? And Camilla herself, Queen Camilla herself, has been speaking about her own experience of sexual harassment, sexual assault, actually, is the term she used, when she was a lot younger. You wonder, don't you, whether this is all pointing towards pressure on Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, as he is now, to go to Congress and answer questions.
Of course. We're seeing, you know, the royal family getting asked more and more questions. And you heard yesterday very powerfully, I thought, from the Labour MP Andy McDonnell when he was speaking to you about the idea that this could cause a constitutional crisis for the royal family.